No, I mean, it's just to hear that Bill O'Reilly, I'm just like, are you kidding me? Talking about, oh, we got to pay for your whatever recreation. And I'm thinking, well, when you're pregnant, you know, that's not an illness either. And what is he talking about? You know, talking about, you know, covering people's...
Well, this is, yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's just absurd. What I think is that this is what we have to look forward to if there's any sort of hint of national health care. You see what I mean? This is the same argument that they drag out anytime anything collective is discussed, you know? But the thing about the birth control is that that's always been mandated. Is it Title VII of the Civil Rights? Which one is the part of the civil rights legislation that is you can't discriminate against women?
Oh, Title IX, isn't it?
Title IX. Anyway, the mandated birth control fell under that regime. So there's no way you can get away with it. If you provide coverage for vasectomy and other stuff for men, you have to provide the same for women. You see what
right.
I mean?
Right, and the utter the fallacy of this religious conscience business is so on display with all of this, because what happens, let's say there's a Jehovah's Witness presidential candidate, better yet, never mind the candidacy. This would be a great time for the Jehovah's Witnesses to come out and say, we demand that no one be allowed a blood transfusion in the United States because that's our conscience.
Or Scientology.
No psychiatry.
No mental health care, you know. Yeah, no, it's just absurd. But also, though, if I may add with this idiot, is he confused? If I take a birth control pill, it's not, you don't take a damn birth control pill every time you have sex. Am I confused and thinking that this idiot is a complete moron?
No, he's got it confused with how the Viagra works, Sandra.
My God, I was just thinking.
He has to take a Viagra every time he has sex with a little Dominican boy.
Right, but you know, I just was like, oh my God. I mean, I was thinking he must. Anyway, that part had me rolling. I'm thinking this dude is completely high.
Well, I don't think he's actually had sex with a single one of his wives, but that's just me speculating.
Well, where is she?
Nobody's seen her.
You know, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, damn.
I mean, you know, Mrs. Limbaugh, don't go to the Safeway, Mrs. Limbaugh. I mean, it's Florida. Sandra, it's Florida. There's lots of people with cameras, and there's lots of celebrity gossip sites that, you know, Mrs. Limbaugh cited while shopping for fur coat in Palm Beach. You know, that kind of, you know, I mean, to think about Rodeo Drive right?
Well, I mean, especially in Florida, you know, I mean, you get around in Florida. I've been down there a couple of times, and yeah, you want to be seen.
And yet, literally, and I think you did the same thing I did, you do a Google search for Catherine Rogers Limbaugh, you do a Google search for Mrs. Rush Limbaugh, and the first hit you get is 2010.
Yeah, no. It is a question that really might have to be put to Gawker or somebody. What's the other one, TMZ? Somebody need to dig it up, man. They need to find.
They may be saving a life.
And who knows? It's kind of like, we don't want to have to put the girl's face on a
milk carton.
Yeah.
No, well, see, that was my next thought. We need somebody who's really good with graphics in the Horn audience to do up, grab a photograph of a milk carton and put a "Have you seen this woman?" notice on the side of it, and maybe we'll send it around some places and see if maybe we can't get a story going on it.
Well, you know, I don't really know. I mean, I know the editor of the Guardian in San Francisco. Maybe I should email him and see if he has some connections somewhere else. Find out what at.
Yeah, hell yeah. I mean, nobody's seen her. It's frightening.
Actually, it is an interesting question.
Well, it is because you remember, well, you probably haven't spent enough time tormenting your brain listening to him. I used to go up and down the road a lot, and that happened to be what was on, and I would torment my mind. And yeah, never agreed with him, but it was something to listen to that, you know, wasn't religious broadcasting. And back when he was married to Marta, he talked about Marta constantly on the air.
Yeah, I mean, that's it.
To the best of my knowledge, he never mentions this latest woman.
That's right. I mean, and he went out with that unfortunate anchor from CNN for a minute.
Oh, yeah.
What happened to her? I mean, she was on TV. Where'd she go?
I don't know.
I mean, what was her name? That'd be somebody to type in, too, because last scene, man.
And none of the former Mrs. Limbaughs ever say a word.
Yeah,
I mean, they must be paid handsomely.
Paid, and you know, anybody gonna give up that just to slander his nasty ass? I bet the stories are a real doozy, though, especially with that Martha person or whatever her name was.
Oh, it's...
is.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry, I creeped a lot of people out running that it puts the lotion on its skin song, but.
Oh God. Well, anyway. So the Israeli thing, you know, is a bit of a worry because Israel has a tendency to be a bit myopic, you know, thinking differently than what the reality is. And I point you to the Lebanon War in 82. That was supposed to be a 2 or 3 day affair attacking some armed Palestinian. Do you know how long that little war lasted? It lasted 18 years.
No.
So when we hear about Israel thinking that they're going to take it out like they did in 1981 in Iraq or 2007 when they took out the reactor in Syria, you know, remember, they also thought it was going to be 2 or 3 days in Lebanon and stayed there from 1982 until whenever they left in 2005 or something.
And that's what I was pointing out talking with David. You know, you've got Hamas, you've got Hezbollah, and suddenly it seems like a good idea to attack Iran.
Well, no, but the thing is, I think that, and they're also the other thing about the Lebanon war is that that also happened without any public discussion within Israel. You know, no, there wasn't a sort of robust debate about what they were doing.
But this latest one, where they rained death on civilian apartment complexes, the Israelis. They wound up going back to Israel with their tail tucked between their legs. I mean, they took
that one lasted 33 days. The last Lebanese war. So they also overestimated themselves there. I'm not saying that they wouldn't be able to, you know, set the program back 3 years or something. But to me, if they attack Iraq, that's a sure way of them getting a nuclear weapon, because I sure the hell would.
Oh, look, nobody pursues nuclear weapons technology for offensive purposes. No one. That's historically established, except for us. We did.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, if they're gonna, because apparently the infrastructure for Iran is quite extensive. It's not just, you know, one building somewhere that's easy for them to bomb. So I just don't think...
No, it's spread out and dug down.
Yeah, I just don't think it's going to be some sort of walk in the park that they might be sort of advertising. So if they're in a prolonged conflict, and they have a short memory, because if I remember right, that war between Iran and Iraq went on for a damn near decade.
Yes.
They don't, you know, so what makes Israel think that it won't be a protracted encounter? You see what
I mean? Well, exactly, because among other things that are extant here, one is the assumption that Iran is pursuing a nuclear weapon. The IAEA
says
they're not.
According to CIA and every sort of agency alphabet agency in this country, it's been no, they're not.
Right, and the other part of it, though, Sandra, is that it doesn't take into account, because we've clothed it in the mantle of a doctrine, it doesn't take into account the Powell Doctrine. And the Powell Doctrine says if you're going to do this, you have to do it with overwhelming force, which means you have to put boots on the ground and you have to have near constant air power and air power sufficient to completely overwhelm the victim, enemy.
Yeah, but
Israel can't do that.
I don't know. I just think that there's so many unknowns. I don't want to go Rumsfeld, but.
Well, no, but this is one of those places where you do.
This is really tricky. To hear Obama talk about he has some countries back, I'm like, what the fuck are they, a basketball team? What are you talking about? He got his back. It's like, no, you need to just have our back and keep us the hell out of that mess, because that business with Israel, with their, I don't mean the Israeli people. I think they have a jacked up government, though.
The Israeli people have shown that they want to, by and large, as far as I can tell, from all those marches in the streets and everything, they want to live in peace. They want a social, they want a European style social democracy.
Yeah.
And they don't want to go to war with anybody.
Right. Well, I just think the situation is really tricky. I get the feeling that, the Obama administration is like, oh, hell to the no. Okay, but this man got to walk on. That pilgrimage to that weird-ass AIPAC thing every year, it's too fucking creepy at this
point. Oh, doesn't it?
Too much. It's like, what is this? And that Netanyahu, he is the most arrogant, disgusting God. I've never despised a world leader more than him at this point. He's horrific.
Like I said, he's a little fascist.
Well,
that's one of those pretty is pretty does situations, and when it goose steps like it, well, it is, yeah.
Well, it's just, his whole sort of, yeah, he's too much, and the way...
Well, we talk about their military policy and everything, but you yourself have remarked, Sandra, on the sort of right-wing approach that they've taken to the social safety net. And to the things that used to make Israel a great place to go if you were Jewish and lived somewhere else in the world.
It also gives you a good reason to want to step up for their wars every other year, But now there is no safety net. That was the whole thing about the citizens now. They're kind of questioning, well, shit, why am I serving every other year when I can't even afford to have housing, So...
Yeah, what am I fighting for?
Yeah, the bargain has been broken, the contract there for a while when they went full neoliberal. So, Netanyahu has all sorts of reasons to want the war, too. That's the thing that's so worrying.
Well, it'd be great for business.
Yeah, and also just, for his own political fortunes. It is such a bad government there. But this is serious because the whole idea of, I don't think they're going to, cut off that strait. I'm like, have you seen the size of that strait? It's not very big.
No, it's throw a rock across.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that the whole proposition is I hope not. I don't know. I don't really know. I don't know what to make of Obama's position. He was throwing down with them like there was no tomorrow in that speech. Cringe. Orama for me.
Oh, without it. And these Dominionists with their little May meeting in Jerusalem, their Jerusalem banquet in New York, like Jude pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
When they start rattling, Andy wrote in a little bit ago. And, Andy's more often than not spot on. And he said, saber rattling against Iran only ratchets up the fear. The defense industrial complex feeds off the fear, continuing the flow of dollars its way. Our defense budget has risen threefold since 1997. This will guarantee it continues to rise, sapping our domestic priorities for the benefit of warmongering defense industrialists. The American people don't benefit. They continually lose as the empire's offensive firepower expands and our domestic infrastructure continues to rot.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I must send you this link to, I think it's Panorama. It's a show out of the UK. Anyway, they did this show on, you know, the poverty in the U.S., the recent poverty. And it's just, it's horrific. You know, there's a lot of, I don't know. I just, the whole idea of some sort of yet another war is just, it's too much. It's ridiculous. And, I don't know.
Well, I mean, we don't. I mean, I guess we could support with some Tomahawk cruise missiles and some flyovers and a down pilot story is always good for the propaganda machine. But we don't, we can't put boots on the ground.
Yeah, no, I don't know. And so it's just a bit of a worry, seeing all this go on. So we'll see. I don't know.
And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because this is the kind of crap, and I think that Andy would agree that, you know, this feeds the speculators' little Jones and ratchets up gas prices, because gas prices damn sure aren't going up because demand is.
And also, you know, today I think McCain, you know, has asked for airstrikes for Syria. And I'm just like, well, wait a minute. Didn't the Syrians just vote for a change in their constitution? I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not a supporter of Assad, but I'm not into this sort of let's create a Libya scenario. So
bombing our way to democracy? No, me neither.
So we can do that again, you know, that to protect the population. Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, Jim asks a very valid question. You know, have you considered the economic relationship between the Russian Republic and Iran? It's not widely known, not widely considered, but It certainly is a 900-pound gorilla in the room, isn't it?
Well, that which would explain why the U.S. couldn't get their foot in the door with the U.N. resolution, since Russia and China said no.
And that, you know, that doesn't, you know, we have stopped a lot of resolutions in the U.N. Security Council on Israel's behalf. But what's frustrating is that Israel never seems to manifest any gratitude whatsoever, Sandra. And so what? They're just going to do what they're going to do and tell Russia and China to you know, the devil take the hindmost?
Yeah, I have no idea. I just think that the Syria is also a much more complicated story than what we're getting.
Oh, without a doubt. And you know, because of the way that they think over there, it just feels like Netanyahu and that crowd are assuming that the world's attention will be diverted by a Syrian civil war, and so that they'll have carte blanche to go and do as they please. Tell me that's not how they think.
Well, they, you know, Israel, they ain't going to come down from the Golan Heights, that's for damn sure, I'll tell you that.
And the other side, I read some story earlier today pointing out that the Russians have sold to Syria some pretty highfalutin radar, electronic detection technology, et cetera, and that they've ramped up the crewing and staffing of it. And put all the high tech that they've got into it so that they'll know almost immediately on a strike being launched on Iran that it's been launched. That's the kind of countermeasure that sort of tells you, if you're plotting that kind of thing, that people are serious about opposing it.
Well, yeah, and it's just, I don't know, I just think that it's and you know, with these freaked out born again people waiting for the world to end. I mean, it's just all, they just probably getting real excited about it, you know, because there's so many ways that it could just turn into some huge regional war, you know. Isn't that what those born agains are waiting for?
Oh yeah, because that's when by creating that war, they compel Jesus to come down from the clouds and they get to start slaughtering Jews.
Yeah, so I just, you know, the whole thing, I mean, maybe it's naive for me to, but I really got to just rely on, you know, the power of the executive branch, since they're not the ones really doing the drum beating, at least not overtly like the Bush administration did.
Well, right, and imagine if this was the Bush administration. You know, John, have there been John Bolton porn stash sightings lately? Because, you know, he's kind of he's kind of a groundhog for these kind of things.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, but you also have Ross, Dennis Ross, who, you know, might as well be a spokesperson for Tel Aviv. I mean, he's an American, but he's even come out saying, no, we shouldn't, there should be no strike against Iran. So I think there's a lot of pushback for it to not happen, but, you know, I don't know. But anyway, the only other thing I wanted to mention was they gave Lenny Dykstra 3 years.
Wow.
Financial fraud. It's like, hello?
And
I mean, I'm sorry.
No, I mean, yeah, right. No, I mean, that's not 3 years probation, right?
No, it's 3 years in California prison. It's not, you know, it's fun time. It's not fun time for him. But it's more of just thinking, you know, how dare you put anyone in jail for financial fraud at this point?
Well, that just kind of... Yeah, that doesn't...
I mean, it's just, you know, it's just so obnoxious. But anyway, I don't know, that just sort of struck me when I saw it. I thought, wow.
Well, yeah, I mean, pick the low-hanging fruit much?
Yeah, it's really too much. Well, anyway, listen, I'll move along.
All right, well, good to hear from you, and we will talk soon, I hope.
Okay, bye.
All right, see you, Sandra. Bye now. Yeah, Lynn Dykstra. I'm with Sandra on that. I saw that earlier today. He tried to withdraw his guilty plea. He pleaded no contest to 3 counts of grand theft auto and filing a false financial statement. They were trying to lease high-end automobiles from area dealerships. And he got 3 years. Then the guys who caused the foreclosure crisis, how are they doing? Oh, yeah, they're slapping waiters in Florida and breaking fingers. Jeanette noting, it all connects, because if there's a war, gas prices will go up, then Obama will be pressured to approve tar sands, because they're trying to make Obama's access to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve contingent on approving the pipeline. Meanwhile, the right-wingers would be able to paint Obama as a warmonger. They would be correct on that, even though they want war, too. I don't think he wants war in Iran. I don't think he does. There's nothing there, to, at least to my mind, to suggest that he does. He'll make happy noises about how much he loves Israel, but you cannot be president of the United States if you don't do that. Interesting little connection... Jude pointing out that the radio station on the big island of Hawaii at Hilo is the one that dumped Rush, and of course the volcano there is sacred to the goddess Pele. Who knows? You never know who one of these jiggling maniacs is pissing off. I mean, I'm not a religious person, but you don't know which spirits are out there. And one of them, you know, I mean, look, I mean, maybe it was the cocaine, maybe it was the meth. For all we know, what did they used to call it? The speedball, part cocaine, part heroin. That guy that dropped dead in the sidewalk at Fort. Don't piss off the universe. And I go back to what we said about that quote from Miley Cyrus, the stars died so that you could live. Don't abuse the star stuff. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program. Okay. Welcome to the program.
Well, friends, I wouldn't need to watch pornography of a girl I've besmirched on the airwaves, and those Viagra pills if I still had Reagan to urinate in my mouth right before Barbara Bush.
Yes, yes.
Up my rectum. And of course, I
want my friends.
Friends, I am a scat muncher.
God bless Bill Hicks wherever he is. Peace be upon him, the prophet.
25 years ahead of its time, that routine right about now? I mean, you could
play, yeah, no
that,
kidding.
Play that right now, and people would think, like, basically, the only thing that dates it is Reagan is alive in that bit. Other than that, and Quayle obviously was still a relevant name. Other than that, I mean, as soon as this thing started brewing, everybody I could think of that would enjoy that, I would post it on their Facebook page, the link to that YouTube video, which is just an audio thing with a picture of Hicks, of that bit. I mean, I heard that just maybe 2-3 weeks before this incident happened, and I about peed my pants laughing at it. And then this happened, and I'm just like, wow, man, like, talk about being ahead of its time. I mean, if only Hicks and Carlin were around for a debacle like this. I mean,
Hicks, Carlin, Hunter Thompson, Joe Bagent.
Yeah, well, you know
where are they when we need them?
You know, it cracks me up too. While this is all going on, the rationalization for what the big fat drug addict said, and being a fat guy, I can make fun of fat people like him and the crook in New Jersey. And the crook in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And no one can call me a bigot, because I'm one. I'm not.
You've got the union card.
But I'm a fat guy. You know, I wear a size 46 belt. You know, I feel I'm in the club. I have every right to make fun of fat guys. And, you know, the rationale is just killing me. Where, first of all, I don't know which, because obviously these people just repeat what they're spoon-fed, so I'm not sure which pundit or radio personality said this to rationalize it about, well, Bill Maher said the C-word about Sarah Palin. Now, there's two things that are a problem about this. You know, where were the liberals when Bill Maher said that? One, Bill Maher's a libertarian. He's not a liberal. He's just to the left of the extreme right. Bill Maher, for the most part, probably has more in common with Ron Paul than he does with any liberal. And two, I would just like to point out that the C word is somewhat like the definition of misogynistic stuff and misogyny, which would happen to be Rush Limbaugh. So, sadly, any woman who's defending Rush Limbaugh right now is sadly somewhat putting herself in that definition. Yeah, as mean as that is to say.
Yeah, even the woman from Everybody Loves Raymond wound up trying to apologize for the things that she said backing him up.
I forget who she was. She was some sort of a Republican chairperson for a county or a state Republican committee out west, because the Crystal Ball, who was a Democrat from Northern Virginia, who was a failed congressional candidate because of some semi-racy pictures from her early 20s they used to besmirch her when she ran.
Yeah, and her name really was Crystal Ball.
And her name's really Crystal Ball, and this one more or less called her a slut, kind of referencing, well, you know, she has the name of a stripper. Which is, that's the best defense you can come up with for Rush Limbaugh, especially as a woman? Like, really? That's the best you can do? They wonder why people dislike them. They wonder why people are smearing, you know, quote, smearing them. Clean out your ears and listen to what comes out of your own damn mouth. Pretty easy to figure out why people are calling you all sorts of names and looking down upon you. You know, when George Will comes out.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. That was beautiful.
And says, you know, you're about the thing Boner said, you know, oh, that was improper. He goes, yeah, no, using the salad fork eating your entree is improper. And then say, you know, they want to bomb Iran, but they're afraid of Rush Limbaugh. You know, that kind of sums it up there. You know, Joe Scarborough, who refers to women as woman on a regular basis on his show, it's certainly not known for being a liberal by any stretch of imagination. Even has been mocking them of late, maybe not so much on this, but even the whole debate about the birth control, you know, saying, you know, when he was on Letterman, he goes, this discussion was solved in 1964 when the Beatles came to the Ed Sullivan Theater. Like, how is this in the political dialogue in 2012? You know, talk about being out of touch. And it's like, what, Joe Scarborough just said that? You know, when I'm hearing...
Yeah, I'd fall over in something hearing that.
When I heard, well, yesterday when I heard George Will say that, you know, I had to take the 9mm out and shoot my thigh to make sure I was actually not drunk. And it hurt like hell. I had to go to the ER. But
yeah, but you only nicked yourself, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was just a mere flesh wound.
Aside from that, I was alive and well, and George Will really said that. Although Lottie pointed out to me last night that apparently George Will has two daughters, which is probably why Rush Limbaugh really kind of crossed the line with him. Because
any of us who do have daughters.
Yeah.
You know,
just respect women.
The sorry bastard just called them sluts.
Yeah, and I love the Imus quote.
I mean, I'd put a fist in his fat face over it. And I don't fight.
I love the Imus quote especially, too, because, you know, Imus got in trouble for it. And the people he said that about were more public figures than the one Limbaugh has been going after since they played in a Division I women's basketball team. And he got the hook real quick over that. And this is even worse than that, especially since, really, I can't believe I'm almost bordering somewhat defending the mumbler, but he said it once. He didn't then go on for a whole week carrying on to the level that Limbaugh has been carrying on about this. I mean, as soon as it came out of his mouth, mumbling it on the air for the few that could understand what he mumbled on WFAN, that was the end right there for him. Limbaugh has just continued to dig a deeper and deeper grave for himself. And someone made a great point in here. I don't remember who, so unfortunately I can't credit the proper person who said this. But somebody said, yeah, no, Rush Limbaugh isn't losing his First Amendment right to free speech. He used it to say the comment. Now the free market's going to take his job away from him with these sponsors.
Right, because there's nothing in the... Remember, Spike, it's the right wing that says that we have to interpret the Constitution from its original intent in 1787, and, you know, that means you've got to interpret the Constitution in a 1787 world. There was no electricity, there was no mass communication, there was no radio, there was no television, there was no internet. And consequently, Rush Limbaugh does not have a First Amendment right to broadcast. He has a First Amendment right not to have the government interfere. And you know, that's the fundamental failing. Every time one of these stories comes up, somebody goes, oh, he's assaulting his First Amendment rights. Yeah, bull. That's one of those bold blinking, I don't understand basic civics lights. Because the First Amendment applies to government action, whether it be, you know, via the federal government or via extension to the state, county, local localities, blah, 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 blah. You don't have a right. You've got a right not to have the government interfere in your speech. But out in the free market? Fair game, baby.
Yeah, that political correctness comes from the free market. It doesn't really come from politics, as the name somewhat implies. Political correctness has come from marketing, which is mostly capitalism. You know, politics use marketing too, but not to the level marketing is used in capitalism. You know, anything that's highly controversial, companies are always going to... most of them that want to stay in business are going to back away from because they need people from all sorts of backgrounds to spend money. That's what a great example is. The majority of these NASCAR tracks are still stuck in the phase. They think the only people they should target their marketing towards are conservative, white, Christian, Republicans. The track here at Pocono, they figured out a long time ago, since they're here in Pennsylvania in the Northeast, if we want to make money, we better not... Now the grandson's in charge. The grandfather was a little bit more polarizing. Because he was just, you know, an old guy. Old people are kind of stuck in their ways. You know, I mean, no offense to that, but that's all just kind of...
No, I mean, it's reality.
He built a solar farm, you know. He's doing things to kind of attract people other than just the stereotypical, quote-unquote, NASCAR dads, because he needs to put butts in the seats to make a living.
Well, some of that also flows downhill from the attitude of the France family, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, they ain't exactly Adlai Stevenson liberals.
Yeah, especially Bill France Sr., who tried his hardest in the 1960s to prevent Wendell Scott, an African-American independent driver who was from Danville, Virginia, which was the final throes of the Confederacy's capital, was the first and really the only African-American to ever win a NASCAR Cup race. They declared someone else the winner that day, and I believe it was Jacksonville, Florida, a short track. And actually, it was, of all two people, one not really that much of a surprise, Richard Petty, the other Bobby Allison, kind of put up a fight behind the scenes and said to Bill Francini, yeah, whether you like it or not, he won the race fair and square. Give him the money and the trophy. He earned it. And needless to say, after the race was over, he was awarded the trophy. Bill Francini never had the kahunas because he was kind of a very... let's just say, not the nicest guy you could ever do business with, to award a black man a trophy he rightfully won in front of a Southern crowd. That's kind of a true story about NASCAR you very, very rarely hear. And also kind of why, in all actuality, I guess, even though he's a Republican, I always kind of like Richard Petty because, for the most part, he's always been a pretty okay guy compared to some of these other characters in NASCAR history. So but Wendell Scott, the movie Grease Lightning, Richard Pryor was based on him.
That's right, that's right. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And Wendell Scott used to buy, like, the year-old cars from Richard Petty often, so he had cars the same color as Petty. His number was 34 instead of 43. And most of the time it was just him and, like, his two sons were his entire crew. Back in the days where they were, quote, independent guys who were not factory-backed. They were basically racing out of their own pocket. Maybe they'd have a sponsor for a race or two from some local dealerships and things like that. But otherwise, they were just doing it for the love and really not making money. And James Hilton, who's still kicking around the ARCA series, although he's from South Carolina, who I worked for years ago in ARCA, he was like that. You know, there were several guys like that before it became the world of Mitt Romney's friends who are team owners, which was like one of the greatest. Just terrible quotes of all time from a political candidate at a NASCAR race. And, you know, I'm disappointed they didn't boo him as heavily as they would have Michelle Obama. And I wonder if Kurt Busch flipped off Mitt Romney's vehicle like he did the day he had his tantrum at the end of last season to Michelle Obama's SUV. I don't know if people, you know, everyone saw the thing with Jerry Punch on the internet where he belittled him and things like that, which is common behavior with the Busch brothers. But the in-car camera actually showed before he parked the car in the garage that day as he went by Michelle Obama's vehicle, he flipped Bird off to that.
Hey.
Kind of show you just how much class Kurt Busch has, which is why Roger Penske, who, by the way, is no liberal by any means of the imagination, just couldn't handle the terrible publicity he was getting from Kurt Busch.
And you know, that's what we're finding out with this whole Limbaugh thing. There is an old adage that there is no such thing as bad publicity, but... It may be that staying is taken as a truism, but it may just well be that we're going to find out that there's an exception to the rule.
It's the Trump school. You know, I think he's watched Trump at this point and realized Donald Trump, much like Ann Coulter, just does the most off the wall baloney to get attention. They're like the kids that have a deep-seated desire for attention, will do anything to get attention. And that's the route he's been going lately. You know, I mean, that's why not only did he say those comments, that's why he's just been harping on them harder and harder because everyone keeps talking about it. It's the Trump school of attention. Only for him, he's going to be on the losing end when it's all said and done because, you know, I guess for whatever reason, it's actually somewhat harder to knock Trump down for being an idiot than it is going to be for Limbaugh eventually. Plus, I just think some people are getting tired of sucking up to Rush Limbaugh and kissing his big, fat, hairy ass. I really believe.
Oh, Lord, you hope so.
I think there are a few Republicans who are starting to get to the point saying, yeah, I'm tired of having to bow down to this guy. You know, if I'm correct, McCain has the beard clear.
But he's one of those people who can say, but you know, this line, yeah, I did not mean a personal attack on Ms. Fluke. My choice of words was not the best, and in the attempt to be humorous, I created a national stir. I sincerely apologize to Ms. Fluke for the insulting word choices. He did. In other words, that is what that is a non-apology apology.
Right. Yeah, and also, I love that Ass Juice and some of them have come out calling him an entertainer. Entertainer? Now, entertainers would be people who actually are they're not being paid by right-wing talking points groups, like the Heritage Group.
But you know what? I do find this interesting. For all the Horn family, welcome to another day ahead of the curve. This just hit over at Think Progress, and they do some good work. Mitt Romney's corporate ties to Limbaugh. This was discussed last Friday. It points out that exactly what I said a few minutes ago. Romney, Bain, Clear Channel, Premier, Limbaugh. And so, therefore, Romney really does have some splaining to do because he's heavily invested by virtue of his retirement package. Jesus, how old is he that he got to retire and makes how many millions of dollars a year? I mean, you want to talk about? No, he's got to answer questions. He's got to answer because he is the reason, in large part, that that Limbaugh, you know, he and the rest of Bain Capital are why Limbaugh is still on the air. But you want to talk about just offensive, Spike? God Almighty! Ann Romney showed up on Radio Rwanda today, and she said, "I don't even really consider myself wealthy." Now they made $20.9 million last year.
I guess because they don't have a giant vault of gold coins to go swimming through like Scrooge McDuck on DuckTales. If she doesn't think that's wealthy, what is her definition of wealthy? I mean, I think even Bill Gates would say, you're wealthy. Okay. Yes, they're not wealthy. Well, then again, that's like Meghan McCain arguing she doesn't understand how people could find that the Romneys are out of touch with normal America. Well,
this is the exact quote. We can be poor in spirit, and I don't even consider myself wealthy, which is an interesting thing. It can be here today and gone tomorrow.
Well, actually, she just accidentally, inadvertently said something very honest. In spirit. They aren't wealthy in spirit, now are they, if they're promoting this sort of treatment of females? They're very empty in spirit. I guess they would be in a deficit of good spirit in light of what they're doing. So I guess she accidentally was...
Yeah, was she admitting that they're spiritually dead? It's kind of like what Rush did today. I had a question asking what he said about Sandra Fluke today. Well, he went after her again. And she goes on about this. Basically, he called her a liar. He said that we still don't know who her friends are, these other women, and we don't know what happened to them. Her testimony was hearsay. It was unprovable. Sandra Fluke used them to advance her agenda, which is to force a religious institution to abandon their principles in order to meet hers. You know, there was no apology. None whatsoever.
Apparently he's been spoon-feeding his audience the talking point that she went to a school specifically to force her agenda upon everyone. Yeah, that sounds as logical as the NRA's ridiculous claims of late about Obama's whole plan is not to do anything about guns the first term so he can get reelected.
Right, yeah, because, you know, we're all going to be gun-free in the next 5 years from now. Right? The other important thing that Flush did say today that is so daggum telling, Spike, is this. He basically admitted the truth, not that he knew that he was, he admitted the truth of the way that I've been describing for-profit broadcasting for a long time. David in Tennessee was telling me, paraphrasing what he said, it was this, "My friends, let's tidy up a bit from that business last week. The libs are going on about some sponsors taking themselves away from your awareness. They will regret that decision. They have been paid handsomely by you, my audience. They don't have you now. I do not care about them. I do this show for you, my audience. Those sponsors don't care about me. They care about the access I give them to you. You are the reason I do this." And see, that is absolute confirmation of what the way I've described it in the past, because it doesn't matter what the content is. For-profit broadcasting is designed to deliver listeners potential customers to businesses, and whatever happens in the middle is just dross. But the thing is, the people who are advertising on Limbaugh, I mean, Jesus, LifeLock, really?
Well, I've always questioned that company.
You know, buy gold coins, and anybody like Sears, Kmart, or Allstate, or some of those other more so-called mainstream businesses, they find out that they're on Limbaugh and go, "Jesus Christ, get us off of there!"
Yeah. Or even Pro Flowers, who sponsors like every terrestrial political talk show, period. Including, you'll hear them all the time with plugs on Schultz and Hartman as well. They just saturate every political talk show. Has, quote, suspended, which is really them riding out to see, okay, let's see, is he going to fall further down or maybe could we go back? Although I found it interesting, someone I know who signed a petition to them actually got an email, you know, a form email, but an email back explaining what they're doing right now, which means, yeah, Pro Flowers, even though really that's not really a company you want to do business with anyways, when there's plenty of local florists who can deliver you a better deal.
Yeah, amen.
But in the same, that's them even saying, yeah, we hear you. you know, for them to send you a form email, that means that they're in crisis control right now, trying to figure out which way to go. I mean, and obviously, you know, a lot of people are, obviously since they're more conservative talk radio on terrestrial radio than liberal talk radio, a lot of people might just assume they, you know, they have some conservative push that's already on these shows, but I can't tell you for how many years when I used to still listen to the liberal or the Democratic Limbaugh and then also Hartman hearing them doing plugs for Pro Flowers on their show. But that, I mean, I think that's one of that's one of the worst ones to pull on him because they put money in every political talk show on terrestrial radio.
Right. They think that they've got a market that's in the car listening to political radio, and they don't much care whether it's right wing or left. It's just that there's a hell of a lot more right than left.
Yeah. I mean, Al Franken used to do plugs for them too. So obviously, for them to be pulling from the quote unquote biggest of all political talk shows, which is huge. Although his ratings have always been malarkey, especially back in the day when they had the old rating system, and he was sometimes only 2 to 3.
Yeah, he'd claim 20 million listeners a week, but that's the same 4 million 5 times a week, and
right.
It's actually considerably less than that.
And in the same, he was on 600-something stations when Stern was on 30, and he was just barely ahead of Stern, which should say a lot right there, because he's on midday. That's actually not a good time for terrestrial radio. The drive times, morning and afternoon drives, which in reality would mean technically Sean Hannity probably has a bigger audience. Sad day for Rush. those are the better times to have a talk show on radio when you have a captive audience and traffic in your major metropolitan area. And now the new system they have, which is more like the Nielsen's rating box kind of system, which is much more accurate, and his numbers have really gone into decline with this new system, is really funny because it's still somewhat questionable maybe just how good his ratings are. And I don't know if you've heard about this, but on their TV show over at Current, Cenk Uygur has actually put out a $10,000 challenge to Limbaugh to prove his ratings are as good as he claims. He says if he can prove those ratings are as good as he claims, he'll pay Limbaugh $10,000, which is really Cenk more or less saying, yeah, I'm putting $10,000 on the line because I know I'm not going to have to pay up because I know he's full of it. So the dirty secret's starting to also get a little bit more and more uncovered that, you know, Limbaugh's numbers have been seriously fudged and fabricated for quite some time. He is, if you just do the...
And if that's the case, Spike, then the more likely it is that he will be easier to ditch. I do have to roll along. I want to hit some more blinking lights before we go. But it's awful good to hear from you, brother. And thanks for being. I found out too late that you were on hold on Friday night. I'm sorry you had to wait, brother.
Oh, it's all right. There was actually a caller who had been on for some time who probably provided better commentary. Anyways, I just like to say if people want to have fun with numbers, go look up the number of affiliates Limbaugh is on. Go get his ratings. Do an average, and then realize just how bad he is in most markets.
And that's borne out by the fact that stations, they're making money from stations paying to have him. They abandoned the full barter method a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Spike, take care, brother.
Later.
Bye now. Yeah, understand. That's all. The whole ratings thing is an imprecise little bit of statistical wishful thinking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob?
Yes.
Hi. Haven't called in a while. This is Ken. Last time I called, it was October 2008.
Well, it has been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. I really appreciate the horn. It's a great communication, progressive outlet, you know, because we're losing a lot of progressive outlets, you know, what happened with Green 960 and all that.
Yeah, that's still grievous.
Yes, that's really terrible. I always wanted to say to Randy Rhodes, do you still like Clear Channel now? But I just wanted to, if it weren't for, you know, I mean, this is a great format, 3 hours conversation radio. Is it really, you know, I haven't listened to Rush Limbaugh in like, since since I became internet literate, I mean, once I realized I had a choice, you know, I could go to the Horn or Pacifica or Air America, like 2001. Well, before the Horn came about 2004, but somewhere in there, once I realized I had a choice, I never even considered those right wingers, you know. So it's good that you guys will play sound bites and stuff like that, because I have no idea what they're saying, and I remember what it was like before, you know, when there was just nothing on the dial. You know, I remember one night I was very slowly turning the AM dial, trying to find a liberal somewhere, and this went on for like half an hour, and there was nothing. And it was like, that's the moment I realized I was in hell or something. I was calling to, things are better now, but I was calling to, you know, about Thursday morning, you know, I was listening to A Democracy Now. I go on the chat room, I go by the moniker Dallas Ken, but I live in Las Cruces, New Mexico. I was born in Dallas, but I live here. I was listening to Democracy Now, I think 8 o'clock their time, Eastern time, your time, 6 o'clock Mountain Standard Time. You never hear anything about Mountain Standard Time. We're in between Pacific and Central. And all of a sudden she announces Andrew Breitbart's death. And you could, even though I hadn't watched the stream that morning, I was just listening to the audio live coming through Pacifica, you could hear the disbelief and the cynicism in Amy's voice itself.
I didn't believe it either.
Yeah, you know, you could hear it. You know, you could just choose, like, let me read this and get this out of the way and move on to more important things. So then about an hour later, I got up and went on to I have a YouTube account. I went on there and I checked the Andrew Breitbart. Well, I checked Google News, and then it was confirmed. Then I went to YouTube. I have an account there, and I checked see if there are any video entries there, and they have a message board. I know some people don't mess with it, but I like it. I think it's fun. And there were still only about 4 or 5 entries on the message boards. But sure enough, most of them were progressive, you know. And they were saying things like, I'm an agnostic, I'm an atheist, I'm a Marxist, but thank God, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I was talking like that, too. You know, I was like, you know, I'm a secularist, but hallelujah, you know. I confess, okay. That early, there was just one right-winger up there saying, you liberals, you're showing your true colors. You're showing the hatred that you really are known for. So I chimed in, and he was saying stuff like, keep on, and you'll expose yourself for what you are. And I chimed in. I said, will do. And I don't know if you've seen some of the blogs, but I'm the guy that bragged about the champagne. I went up, it was an off day, and I lived down the street from a liquor store, and I'm the guy that walked up the street and got a cheap bottle of Cook's champagne because that's all I could afford. I wanted something nicer, but yeah, I get it.
No. For something like that, Ken, you want the cheap stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. No, you don't open the Veuve Clicquot for the expiration of a walking. Let's see, what did he call Ted Kennedy? A pile of excrement.
Excrement, yes, sir. That's exactly what he said. And sure enough, there were just a few. You know, there was so much disbelief at first. I went up on Steph. I don't know if I heard anything on Stephanie Miller. I got the impression that the word had come down to Randy and Steph and even Ed. Not to say anything, you know.
Oh, I wouldn't be, well, in particular with Randy, because the same people that signed Limbaugh's paycheck sign hers.
Yeah, well, like I was saying about Green 960, I want to ask her, I said, do you still like, you know, she was like, oh, I like Clear Channel, they're great. I said, you still think they're great now, you know? But I waited a few more hours, and I went on to Sam Cedar's live stream, which is like 11:30 Eastern Time, 9:30 Mountain Time, and he had a very intelligent balance, not surprisingly intelligent, pretty much the stuff like, well, you know, something like, well, it was, you know, he has that humor touch, you know, he's insignificant in that he's a douchebag and he's died, but let's deal with what he did. He destroyed lives, he destroyed people, and of course that one, he dealt with it Thursday and Friday. Then I get to Norman Goldman, and once again, it almost made me believe in a God. I thought, well, Norman Goldman went to town on him. I mean, Goldman put foot in his ass. Goldman said, yes, let's celebrate, let's party. And then I thought you were going to be back by Thursday, but you weren't, so you had the rerun on. So I was a little disappointed there.
Yeah, I understand, but we didn't get back until about 7:15, yeah. But... I heard that day, and I thought, I hope I get, but I didn't. Jim just chimed in with regard to your Cook champagne. Jim said, "MD Mad Dog 2020 would have been more appropriate, Ken."
I see, but I'm just confessing. You know, I don't want to. You know, because there was division in the progressive camp. There was this, we're above that. He's gone. He wasn't. I agree with both sides.
Well, look, I really do hew to the Mark Antony strain on this, that, you know, we come not to praise him but to bury him, or to castigate but to bury. But the fact of the matter is, for me, is that it is a fact. I mean, it's, you know, real. That there are people who lost their homes because Acorn was destroyed, and Acorn was destroyed because of the hatreds that lived inside the dead place where the soul was inside that 43-year-old jackass.
Yeah, that, you know, he had a book deal and everything, you know. I kept thinking, who is this character? You know, my attitude about him, the attitude that some of the other leftists were saying, was the one I had when he was alive. When he was alive, he was sort of persona non grata. I got tired of hearing it. I said, stop singing his praises. You know, he's a jackhole, so, and he doesn't exist in my universe. And then you go into books, go into Barnes and Noble, and his books would be there. I'm like, who is this jackass? You know, he's got a book deal? I mean, Malone doesn't have a book deal. I mean,
no, and God, what I would not pay, or would pay, depending on what's it, for a book by Malone. That would be worth the read.
Yeah, that's what I used to think, and sure enough, later I waited. I realized it was a rerun on your stream, so I went. I think I went back to Pacifica, and they were in the pledge drive. So when Malloy came on, sure enough, I was vindicated. Malloy said, "Yeah, let's party, let's celebrate." You know, he was an SOB. He was a jackass. He was, you know, and that's what...
Well, yeah, and it all just went right over the top for me when I read that one freak who said that he was just like a civil rights demonstrator at a Greensboro lunch counter.
Malloy read that, and he was like, come on. And Norman Goldman read it, too, because they were the two tacos that day that said, this guy, yes, we're going to dance on his grave. Yeah,
F him, stick him in a toxic waste barrel and drop him in the Mariana Trench.
Right.
Well, see, I was there at Netroots Nation last summer when he came in deliberately to disrupt the proceedings.
Right.
And that's what he's, and lo and behold, he became, instead of all the myriad great stories that could have come out of Netroots Nation, lo and behold, the story was Andrew Breitbart in the company of a bunch of drunks gets in, deliberately provokes an argument with progressives. Well, that ain't going to happen anymore.
Right. I never heard any substance in his arguments. I mean, he wasn't William Buckley. He's not George Will. I mean, he was. He just, like, you got, well, Cedar. Sam Cedar said he seems like the kind of person who got into a fight with a liberal. The liberal kicked his ass in high school, so he's a conservative. You know, that was...
Yeah, and sitting around listening to Orson Bean scream probably had something to do with it, now that we know that. Hey, Ken, I've got to roll on. I want to try to hit a couple more buttons, but I'm glad you got through, and hopefully we'll have more conversations. Don't be such a stranger.
Right. I'm on the chat now. Okay.
Okay, great. Take care, Ken.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. And let's try to wedge in another call. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi, this is Ken over in Hawaii.
Well, hey, Ken. That's two Kens in a row, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That doesn't happen a lot.
Yeah, I was so glad to hear Rush Limbaugh not on the radio today.
Oh, cool. Yeah, just out of curiosity, what did they replace him with?
I don't know. I guess they just went straight to the sports because the channel that he's on is normally all sports, and then Coast to Coast at night, which is, you know, half right wing anyway. So, it was nice to see something different. It was just, I don't like sports, but at least it was not, you know.
Oh, look, I'd take Dan Patrick, Jim Rome, just about any of them over him.
Yeah, they were talking about the New Orleans Saints, you know, pay to hurt.
Yeah, that's a little creepy.
Oh, man. What a week.
Oh, I know. And you know, we're just getting started on the new one. I got a feeling this one's not going to be any easier.
Yeah. Then Madam Pele over here took out the last house in Royal Gardens that's been there for, let's see, about 20-plus years by itself. All the other homes got taken out back in the 80s or so, and now this is the last one. And the guy's been living there the whole time, and he finally just had to leave the other day. And, you know, like a couple hours after he left, the house was burned over.
Wow.
Going down towards the coast.
Well, it sounds like maybe Rush did piss her off.
Yeah, it's been a heck of a time. But I think I did the right thing getting out of getting off the mainland. You know, sometimes I regret it, but. Most of the time, I'm pretty happy with it.
You'd be surprised the number of times that I look around here, or I'll hear a blast or something, and I actually think of you. It really does happen. I think you made the right choice. There's just not enough island for the rest of us. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's we're seeing an increase in population over here because of it.
Really?
Yeah, we're actually where everybody else, you know, is pretty much going down. We're still. You know, cranking over here. Real estate prices have stayed steady, and they've slowed down, but a lot of people are moving out because prices over here are so cheap, you know. And you think you can pretty much, you know, build your own, like we've done, built our own little farm on 3 acres. So.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, my bamboos are 40 feet in 3 years now.
Holy cow.
Yeah, some of them are wider than my thigh.
Yeah, so do you have that for like a little privacy fence around your place, or?
Oh no, I'm just I'm pretty much doing a nursery, and I collect species. I've got bamboo, flowers, spices, fruit, palm.
Oh man,
I just collect any type of plant. I've got kiwi just recently. Got blueberries, bosonberry. I'm just trying to prepare for anything, you know.
Well, I think that's wise. Do you have access to good water?
Oh yes. Well, that's one thing we have almost a little bit too much of. We get about almost 150 inches of rain a year, so we're pretty saturated. You know, we get a good bit of rain.
So you're kind of upslope then?
I'm just actually probably no more than 10-15 miles away from that volcano.
Oh wow.
Yeah, we're in what you call Curtis Town.
Well, I will have to look that up on Google Earth.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Like I said, it's a jungle. We live like right in the middle of a jungle, and I'm just filling it in with more plants. So
that's a beautiful thing, Ken, and I really appreciate hearing from you. I got a roll though. We will hopefully have more time for conversation soon.
Yeah, just want to say you definitely have one viewer or one listener out here in Hilo.
Hey, you know what? You have no idea what that means. That is so cool. Thanks, Ken.
And I'll support you any day over Limbaugh. You have a good one.
All right. Take care. Bye now.
Aloha.
Aloha. Yeah, aloha indeed. Did I mention that it snowed today? It did. Hey, it's time to get out of here. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thank you for your kind contributions. Remember, the Beat the Swede Challenge is on. Our all-volunteer staff appreciate your help. And we appreciate our all-volunteer staff, from our moderators in the chat room to our news ninjas to our blogger, our op-ed columnist, my head writer David in Tennessee, John Fox, who has just returned from a grueling week of gigs, and, of course, Ben Birch. Thanks. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Learn about the work of the bravest people I know by going to CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy. It's all for you.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are, a minute past the hour on this sixth day of March 2012. What had been 6 inches of snow is now gone to a 60-degree, clear, bluebird, lovely day. Consistency, you know, that's another one of those victims of climate change. Consistency of weather patterns. Oh, well. So I should probably make a program note right off the bat. Thanks to Randy and a couple of others out there for letting me know that the website is down. I've been out of town all day long in a meeting that started in the morning and ended at about 4, at which point I came racing back up the mountain to get into the chair, and so was unable to address it. But anyway, the website's down. You can get into the headonradionetwork.com chat room via the back door. Jug of Punch is in there with me right now. And you can get the stream over at White Rose or iTunes Radio or Stitcher Radio or Tuner Internet Radio or TuneIn Radio. My goodness gracious, there's a million different ways to get the program now. And none of them involve me calling anyone a slut. So, hey, we may be having troubles, but we're not having those kind of troubles. Speaking of Jabba the Slut, he's now lost something on the order of 30 advertisers, and the civically challenged idiots of the right wing,
his free First Amendment rights is being trampled by them liberals.
No, not so much. Not so much. Because after all, as we all understand here, and as we noted on the program last night, I have to say we, because remember, Pat Boone is upset by people who say I. We noted here on the program last night that no one's trampling on Rush Limbaugh's First Amendment rights. He can go out and stand on the street corner there, and he can trundle his jiggling bulk out to a street corner in Palm Beach, Florida, or wherever the hell it is that he is keeping the latest Mrs. Limbaugh in a pit. And he can stand on the street corner and scream slut, 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 until to his filthy little heart's content. And with the exception of perhaps some public decency laws, nobody's going to bother him. Right? Yeah. But he does not have a right to... The First Amendment doesn't cover, you know, that thing that the Repiglicans all love so much. The free market! Oh, that free market's biting little flush in the butt. Let's see. Who all, as of Showtime, who all has he lost? The latest to go, Capital One. They recently aired some ads on the Oxymorons program. And Capital One said, "We have reiterated our advertising choices to our media partners. If an ad did run, it was not authorized by us, and we do not want it to happen again." Good for you, Capital One. Good for you. As my buddy Rick Smith would say, good for them. Of course, that is a bit of a, we didn't do it, and we didn't know who did it, and even if he did do it, he was only following orders. Down East Energy has also bailed out. It's at 32. Netflix, they were mentioned on the program last night. They said goodbye to the jiggling, pendulous bulk of Jabba the Slut. "We have instructed our advertising agency to make sure that this error will not happen again." Apparently, the two Netflix spots were picked up in error as part of local news breaks during the Rush Limbaugh show. Ain't gonna happen no more. They are avoiding him in droves. And the sad thing is, and Sandra touched on this last night, the man has been a sleaze merchant for decades. And only now is he finally getting his comeuppance. Well, far be it from me to criticize. It's true. And I'm gonna be glad when he's gone. Frankly, if he couldn't throw himself into the ocean, he'd just sort of jiggle and bob back onto the surface like some sort of, onto the beach like some sort of noxious pool toy. I know, that's probably an image you don't even want to contemplate, is it? Hi, by the way, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, America's liberal voice. We call what we do here Conversation Radio. And we don't really have a name for Tuesday. Yesterday was More In Monday. Tomorrow's prayer meeting Wednesday. Thursday is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Friday's Friday on the Front Porch. And poor little Tuesday just sort of... what is Tuesday's child, anyway? Tuesday's child is terminally depressed and it chews its toenails or something. I don't know. But it's Tuesday. And 32 advertisers. But you know what? It didn't slow the oxymoron down. Not even the least. He wasn't so keen on mentioning Sandra Fluke by name today. I don't know. Maybe legal counsel has gotten through to him. "Oh, Rush, you might want to stop that whole slander thing you're doing there. That could jeopardize all them millions that..." Right, and then people might find out about Mrs. Limbaugh living in that pit and everything. But where he has previously been assaulting Sandra Fluke as a representative of women, he took the opposite tack today. Instead, attacking women generally. He's mad at an author by the name of Tracy McMillan, because of a book she's written about the American food system. Oh, dear God, not another one of those, please. It's getting hard enough to find stuff to eat. But the thing, it's called The American Way of Eating, Undercover at Walmart, Applebee's, Farm Fields, and the Dinner Table. Well, that just sounds terrible. It's getting... good reviews, and I'm going to have to look into it, because anything that causes causes Jabba the Slut to have a hissy must not be an entirely bad thing. So let's find out. It's just a short clip. I promise it won't ruin too many meals. Okay? Tell us about it, O Jiggling One.
It has to be the best, it has to be the most expensive, but it has to be practically given away. Otherwise, what? Walmart is racist. That's how this works. This is how pressure is brought to bear on people in the private sector. Accuse them of racism, discrimination, servicing only a few small percentage points of the market. Force them to cave to the all-powerful demands of the federal government, because to do otherwise is to incur their wrath, and nobody wants that. What is it with all of these young, single white women, overeducated? Doesn't mean intelligent. For example, Tracy McMillan, the author of this book.
What is it with all of these young, single white women, overeducated? It doesn't mean intelligent. I guess by extension you can also note that Flush Flimbaugh, who was a community college dropout, that being undereducated also doesn't mean intelligent either now, does it? But we don't want to talk about Flush all night long. He's sickening. He's disgusting. So let's talk about... No. Well, I guess we're gonna... It's Super Tuesday. That's the day when all kinds of states banded together to try to get themselves some relevance in the primary process, because after, well, you know, after Michigan and South Carolina and Florida and Iowa and New Hampshire, this was a few years ago of trying to create a little bit of buzz. And frankly, I don't give a damn who wins any of these damned the filthy right wing Republican primaries. I don't, but I do care about one race. I care very deeply about one race, and it's taking place in Ohio, and we've talked about it a little bit from time to time on the program. It's the byproduct of some nasty-ass redistricting accomplished by the Republican-controlled state legislature there in Ohio. And they took Marcy Kaptur, who is the ranking female in the House of Representatives, and they created a new district in which they pitted her against the single most consistently and conscientiously progressive member of the House of Representatives, Dennis Kucinich. And over the course of the race, Marcy Kaptur has done sleazy things. For instance, what is this line? Just listen to how goofy this is. This Tuesday, the choice is yours. Art Modell, LeBron James, Dennis Kucinich, and another moving van in Cleveland, or Ohio's own Marcy Kaptur. That's the sleazy ad that she's running, because Clevelanders despise the very name of Art Modell. He's the guy who took the Browns out of Cleveland and took them to Baltimore. Cleveland without the NFL is like, oh, I don't know, Florida without sunshine. And, of course, you know, there was the vicious hatred of LeBron James when he decided not to stay with the Cleveland Cavaliers and instead went down to the Miami Heat, you know. Yeah. And they're just like Dennis Kucinich. What a sleazy twit she is. Now, the news articles I've read refer to her as being another progressive. And I guess she's done a couple of progressive things somewhere along the way. But she's got big money from the military-industrial complex. And, among other things, she has been supported by a super PAC out of Texas. And this is the deal-breaker for me. She thinks that it would just be great if only we could build that toxic pipeline through the middle of the United States, the Keystone XL pipeline. If we could just build that, everything would be hunky-dory. Lord, it'd be sunshine and violets all over in the front yard. Right. So that's being decided today. The polls are not closed in Ohio as yet. It is not, if you live anywhere near that new district, it is not too late to go and vote. If you live in that district and you are and you care about having a consistently, conscientiously progressive voice in the House of Representatives, pick up the phone, start calling, knock on doors. Just have you gone and voted today? This is the single most important race going on in the country today, period. It determines whether or not there will be, there will continue to be a strong progressive voice in the House of Representatives, or whether Marcy Kaptur will get to be the ranking member of the House Appropriations Committee. I'd rather have the progressive consistently, right, correct. I wish I could vote for him. Unfortunately, I'm here and I can't. But you may be there, and you could, if you haven't already, get thee to the polls. And by the way, just backing up for a minute. If you ever had any doubts or any curiosity, maybe I should sign up for that LifeLock identity protection system. Don't. As of Monday, LifeLock has said that it is staying with Flush Flimbaugh, and that's mainly because, it's a pretty dodgy operation after all the head of the organization got his own identity stolen. We do not agree with Rush Limbaugh's recent comments, but we acknowledge his apology. That's from LifeLock Chief Marketing Officer Marvin Davis. At this time, we are not making any changes to our advertising program. That makes LifeLock, American Forces Radio, Hillsdale College, and Lear Capital that are standing by their man. So you've never given LifeLock any of your money, have you? God, I hope not. I mean, the reason LifeLock advertises over there among the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, dead-from-the-neck-up goobers of the ditto-head army is because they're about the only ones that are simple enough to buy into a dodge like that. So, assuming if you drink a fifth of cheap tequila and you think, I need to sign off that LifeLock. Sober up! Don't do it. Don't do it. All kinds of weirdness out there this evening. Let's see, we've got weirdness in Minnesota. We've got Trump weirdness. We don't have to talk about Trump, do we? Let's see, we aren't. Yeah, uppity, overeducated single women. Yeah, okay. And this. This business of as noted, just another reminder: the website is down. The HeadOnRadioNetwork.com website is down. No, Ray, I will not call you a slut. I just won't do it. I'm sorry. By the way, the number of, it's gone up to 35 now. Jesus, this is like some sort of telethon. 35 advertisers have now stepped away from the jiggling one. David in Tennessee noting, as far as LifeLock is concerned, it has been well established that everything LifeLock can and may do for a subscriber can be done for one's self. Every damn thing. You don't even have to go and buy a real security program that could protect NASA. Everything one needs is in Norton and a few precautions. Like you said, it's for chumps. LifeLock. We all remember the three commandments, right? Never mind the ten, the three. You can't cheat an honest man. Never give a sucker an even break. And don't smarten up a chump. And the reason that a lot of these advertisers, you know, the Life Locks and the Buy Gold Coin and the vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls and drop them on Swedish mattresses, the reason they're advertising on Limbaugh is because Limbaugh's listeners are chumps. And they are you out there, Reverbo? They are well chumped, and they're staying that way. Yeah. Oh, but I can't do that. I can't save this field till tomorrow. It's too good. You know, I was checking my email last night after the program, and I got an email from I got a note from our buddy Dennis in Kentucky. Here in a couple more months, we're going to be back mowing grass together. But he noted that after the tornadoes ripped across the midsection of the country a couple of days ago, he said, talk about being kicked while you're down. It was followed up by a 6-inch snowfall. It's true. So often is it's the case that after the tornadoes blow through, what follows is bluebird perfect weather, which is another form of being kicked while you're down. But at least what might be left of your physical world isn't getting frozen and snow. And that's brutal enough. And like I said, I just can't save this until tomorrow. David in Tennessee noted last night, some things won't wait till Wednesday. And this won't. Who could it possibly be that would make me say something like that? Well, come on.
This is Don from Illinois who wants to know, why did God send the tornadoes?
God didn't send tornadoes. God set up a world in which certain currents interfere and interact with other currents. When you have a warm group of air coming out of the south, coming up against a cold mass that's up in the north, mm-hmm. you'll get vortexes, and that in turn will spawn tornadoes.
You mean
God doesn't
demons?
Send tornadoes to hurt people. He doesn't send, you know, yeah. we call them acts of God, but they're not. All I can say is that why do you build houses in a place where tornadoes are apt to happen?
Yeah. Well, and this year, of course, the weather patterns, the warm winter and the warm, you know, early part of the year that we're having seems to affect all of that. But I think the bigger question for people spiritually is always not so much why did God send them, but why didn't he intervene? You know, you think people always ask that question.
Well, if enough people were praying, he would intervene. You could pray, God, Jesus stilled the storm. You could still storms. But, you know, the hurricane, for example, is a release mechanism that God set in to take the heat out of this world and to transfer heat around various parts of the globe. It's very necessary. The fact that people decide they want to build houses on the edge of an ocean, it's their fault, it's not God's. You know, it's the same thing with if you're going to build a house on the San Andreas Fault. You know there's going to be a fault. You know the earth is faulted, and there are going to be earthquakes. So don't blame God for doing something foolish.
Thanks again to the fine folks at rightwingwatch.org for taking it for the team day after day and recording this stuff. By the way, he was talking about people who insist on building things right on the edge of the ocean where they can be hit by hurricanes. Shh. Don't tell Pat, but he done went and built his studios in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Virginia Beach is not ironically named. It really is, right there, you know, on the ocean. You can, right. But you can't beat Pat for some just straight-up Christian compassion. Why'd you build your house where God had put it to send a tornado? This is the kind of apologetics you get from it. But the one that grabbed me, did it grab you? Was that, well, if enough people would have prayed, the tornadoes wouldn't have come. Imagine the supreme ruler of the universe that Pat Robertson worships. Hey, St. Peter, how are we doing with the anti-tornado tote board over there? Well, Lord, you said you wanted 2,512, and we've only gotten 2,511 prayers, Lord. Let him have it! Smite him good, Pete! Thirty-nine people died in those storms. And this follower of the Prince of Peace says it's because not enough people prayed the tornadoes away. Remember that movie Twister? Who was that? Bill Pulliam and I can't remember her name from Mad About You. You know, there are real people who are storm chasers out there. You reckon we could get, because, I mean, God tells Pat who's going to be the president and tells Pat who made the, why, God tells Pat why he sent those 19 terrorists to attack the Pentagon and the Twin Towers and the White House and he tells him all that. I mean, they have conversations, you know, they sit on the porch and they just have guy talk. You reckon, then that seeing as how Pat's such a top-shelf prayer, you reckon maybe he, if we could get him in a storm chaser vehicle, I don't know, take him out to Oklahoma Stan or somewhere, he'd feel at home out there. Why are you building that? Well, you know. And just sort of drop him in front of a tornado and get praying, Pat! Pray the tornado away! This from the same crowd, of course, who prays the gay away. Yeah, I heard some polling data on the way home. I think only 20% of voters today showing up for Super Tuesday said that character mattered or religious affiliation mattered. That doesn't bode well for the candidate from Frothy, the man from Frothy. No, the religious right at this point, we just got to have somebody that can beat that one that's living in our White House. Maybe they should pray. You know. So... Jim, yeah, the website is down. You can still get the stream via White Rose Society, via iTunes Radio, via Stitcher Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio. But the direct stream is still right there at whiterosesociety.org. Then you can get the stream. I imagine. Given the time difference between here and Australia, John Fox is working on it. But the stream server is still working quite nicely. Oh, Helen Hunt. Thank you. Thank you, Ray. Ray noting, you know, folks been praying for peace for thousands of years now. Ain't really worked yet. and we just can't quite, that's right, Ray, I mean, we just can't quite get enough people to pray the tornadoes away. You just come, missed it by that much, right? Tell that to those 39 grieving families, you filthy swine, Pat Robertson, you. Right. So, there's that. It is. It is going to be a busy night. But starting out with Pat, yeah, that was just, that was too easy. Story coming out of, come on, you know it, Texas. We've got that this evening. Oh, we'll go ahead. Yeah, why not? Rick Santorum's words are coming back to haunt him, just as Flush's are. He was a second-term member of Congress in 1994, back when he and Newt Gingrich and the rest of those people who had a contract out on America. And he was running around to town hall meetings and TV appearances and so forth. And he said, Rick Santorum said this, "What we have is moms raising children in single-parent households, simply breeding more criminals." Huh? Yeah, there's that pro-life Rick Santorum. What we have is moms raising children in single-parent households simply breeding more criminals. Breeding! 94, 2004, yeah, so 18 years later, the women folk have to be breeders, but gee, many Christmas. Of course, this is hand in hand with that bill that which state was it? Somebody help me. We mentioned it a couple of nights ago. Maybe it was Friday. That bill that said that single parent households are to be de facto considered to be abusive and neglectful households. Is that Wisconsin? I think it was Wisconsin. You know, the state with that Union local flag that says Wisconsin 1848. Still not over that. So in Rick Santorum's world in 1994, a woman didn't need to be breeding more criminals, but she also couldn't get an abortion. Oh, by the way, another in the long list of people dropping Flush Flimball. JCPenney. You know, the company that all the little right-wingers and ditto monkeys and freaks were so mad at a couple of weeks ago. Well, they done hired that Ellen DeGenerate. Well, JCPenney said, "We have a strict no-run policy in place specifically regarding the Rush Limbaugh show. After JCPenney confirms the facts, we will contact any local radio station that is in violation of our radio advertising parameters to ensure that our no-run policy is adhered to regarding this program." 33. Can't wait till we get to 42. His First Amendment rights is being trampled. Yeah. Not so much. So, hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Jim?
Just give me if you could just, I can't get you through White Rose. I don't know what's wrong.
WhiteRoseSociety.org, not .com.
Okay, all right, I'll try that.
Okay. That was quick and easy. That was Jim. Oh, thanks, Kim. Ambush question. Are you going to give us your opinion about Tebow being on The Bachelor show? I'm so waiting for your response, your real response. You've heard this, right? That TV show, that I have never watched it, no, not once. But it involves something about giving out roses, and I don't know. But there is some talk that little Timmy Jebo may be on The Bachelor. Yeah, really. Of course, I don't. Well, how do I really feel about it, Kim? I think he would be out of place. I don't think he digs chicks. And that's it. If they had a gay bachelor show, he'd be right there. Except he can't because he's a fundamentalist. And I don't know. Watching The Bachelor would be like that scene from A Clockwork Orange where they've got Alex strapped into the chair with his eyelids propped open with those hateful like metal tongs, and they just keep dropping little eye drops in his eyes as they reprogram it. That's what watching The Bachelor would feel like to me, with or without little Timmy Jebo. Agnes, quit Tebowing in the studio. We've talked about that. Daggummit.
Tebow for Jesus, yay.
See what happens when I leave the studio for a day? I don't know. Maybe The Bachelor could advertise on Flush Flimball. That may be all that's left. David in Tennessee noting, you know, what with several repig-licking consultants saying that, Rush can't deliver a pizza, let alone votes. Flush's real wardrobe, as in the king's new clothes, have become apparent to repig-licking operatives. He's not quite the power person he once told himself that he is. Okay. I'll buy that, Kim. The right-wing fundamentalists would love him. Virginal love on TV. You may be assuming facts, not in evidence. And then, of course, what's his name? The backup quarterback would probably get mad about that, too. Thanks, Robert. I appreciate that. iTunes horn connection okay in Australia. John is hard at work on the website, and he's trying to restart part of it, and it ain't working. It's enough to... drive a human being to drink. One of the few bonuses that come with all this turf. Hey, wow, that's really cool. A little tweet going out from our friend Ultra Verified. WhiteRoseSociety.org, please support Ben Birch. He's provided a great service to the left for many years, providing streaming online. How very cool. Thank you for that tweet, Ultra Verified. Thank you very much. Yeah, maybe we are. Maybe we are, Lottie. Maybe we're seeing the demise of the Repig-Licking Party. Maybe they are going the way of the Whigs. Can I call? Yeah, I can, John. I will do that. I will do that right now. Okay, here's the deal. John needs for me to touch base with Ben Birch, the previously mentioned. Kevin wants Jim to know that TuneIn.com is working just fine, as is iTunes Radio. TuneIn.com is another place that you can get the horn stream. So we will go to the phones momentarily. David in Tennessee noting, I did Google search, head on radio, picked select stream under the horn menu, and golly, Sergeant Carter, there's Bob. Okay, we've got a Gomer. How long has it been since we've had a Gomer Pyle reference on this program? Hello, Lou Ann Pooley.
Hello, Gomer.
Dear God. So here's what we're going to do. We'll take a little break, and I'm going to get in touch with Ben, and you are going to light up the phone lines. Because it is Tuesday, and Tuesday doesn't have a name, and Tuesday's child, you know, plays with its earwax or whatever. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. The direct dial number, 304-658-3333, and as David from Maine so frequently notes, I don't give the information out enough. The email address is Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. We'll come back after a break, and we've got the Green News Report on the way. So line them up and jump right in. I hate to leave folks. I hate to leave folks on hold at the end of the evening. This is a great way for that not to happen. If you dial in now, plenty of space and plenty of time. Okay, let's do that. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the Horn.
Potty and I went to the circus. The potty guy helped with a rolling pin. We got even with the circus. We bought tickets, but we didn't go in. We won't lag it when I pull it. He's in a bag doing his father. But you like a wood, it's hiding in the shells. We're going with him. I told my brother, when a police come, don't send nothing, don't send nothing. And a police will come that don't like it when you beat them to the punch. Don't like it when you come in on that hunch. And I've seen more dreams riding on his eyes. And it's your thing, like the stories.
Story in the world, be there with me. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, March 6, 2012.
Already there's too much loose talk of war.
Iran war talk jacks up U.S. gas prices.
If it continues to go higher, it will crater the economy by August.
As Republicans cheer.
Echoes of McCarthyism.
A Virginia court smacks down a climate denier witch hunt. The new normal for tornado season. Plus,
besides compensation, they want the truth.
2 years after disaster, BP settles with Gulf Coast residents.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Issues matter, and reality matters.
Oh, Newt, why start now? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, over the last week, we've had two different huge storm systems, both featuring tornadoes of an EF4 level. Now, while we've talked for years that, you know, no one weather system indicates climate change, this sort of extreme swing in the weather is precisely what scientists have been predicting for decades.
Indeed it is. This unusually mild winter plus a warmer Gulf of Mexico are loading up the tornado gun early this year. It's just 1 week into March and already we're seeing more tornadoes and more intense storms than usual for this time of year, including those two EF4 tornadoes, the second highest designation. It's already also the deadliest March for tornadoes in nearly 20 years, according to the National Climatic Data Center. The death toll likely would have been higher without new updated early warning systems that have been funded by taxpayers. Gas prices are at record highs for this time of year, again, not due to any actual supply crunch, but because of Wall Street speculators' concern over a potential conflict with Iran disrupting oil supplies.
We even have a glut right now.
Indeed,
gas, don't we?
We do. Over the weekend at the conference for AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, President Obama called for cooling the rhetoric on conflict with Iran.
Over the last few weeks, such talk has only benefited the Iranian government by driving up the price of oil, which they depend on to fund their nuclear program.
Higher gas prices may hurt the economy and American consumers, but not Republicans, because it benefits their prospects of winning the election in November, according to Republican presidential candidate and former House Speaker Newt Gingrich on CNN.
The price of gasoline is becoming a genuine crisis for many American families. If it continues to go higher, it will crater the economy by August, because people will have no discretionary income.
Is it my imagination, or does Newt Gingrich sound downright giddy there?
Yeah, it does seem that there are kind of glad that these higher gas prices might be good for them and for big oil.
I can't imagine why.
In other reality-denying news, score one for academic freedom.
Rachel Levinson, the senior counsel of the American Association of University Professors, has said that your action, quote, had echoes of McCarthyism.
The Virginia State Supreme Court has dismissed, with prejudice, a lawsuit from Virginia's Republican State Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, a climate change denier, and his attempt to obtain the personal emails of climate scientist and former University of Virginia professor Michael Mann, the author of the hockey stick temperature graph. Cuccinelli said he was investigating whether Mann defrauded Virginia taxpayers by manipulating scientific evidence, even though the hockey stick graph has been vindicated many times over.
And even though apparently he had no evidence to make that claim.
Finally,
one of the things that the clients want
is besides compensation, they want the truth.
British Petroleum has agreed to an out-of-court settlement with plaintiffs hurt by the BP oil disaster in the Gulf of Mexico nearly 2 years ago, the worst oil spill in the nation's history. In the proposed settlement, BP estimates it will pay $7.8 billion to 120,000 plaintiffs, from residents to businesses, to settle claims related to the 2010 spill that decimated the Gulf Coast's commercial, fishing, and tourism industries. The estimated settlement is slightly more than BP's fourth quarter profits for 2011. And that's in addition to about $14 billion, BP says, it's already paid in the aftermath of the spill. But it's not over. The partial settlement does not include fines from federal or state governments, where BP faces up to $18 billion in civil pollution fines and damages on the federal level alone, and also does not include potential criminal charges.
Did I hear you right that this settlement equals about one quarter of profits for BP?
Yep.
It sounds like they're getting off pretty easy. Who would have thunk it? For more on that story and the others we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report, at least until our settlement goes through with BP. Remember, you can subscribe to all of our reports for free at iTunes. You can listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher Radio and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Total Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey dude, wait 1 second, it's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius, we got your soap right here.
And don't worry about that body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
Minutes before the hour, and I have to wonder.
So you say there's a race of men in the trees. You're for Trump's legislation. Thanks for calling. Wait on night. Falls like.
Yeah, I have to wonder if Lester the Nightfly ever had problems like this down on Mount Belzoni. Huh. This is the horn, and I don't know. This is the. Somebody took the website down on Super Tuesday edition. It is being worked on as we speak. So let's try. By the way, tweets coming in from Hornies here, there, and yonder. Fritz just sent a message along saying just got in the pickup and streaming the horn via TuneIn Radio in Podunk, Southeast Arkansas. Stop to type message. I'm glad you did. I'm glad you stopped, Fritz. Texting and driving don't mix. But I am glad to know that the stream is getting out. Apparently, we just got attacked on the website end. Because, you know, it's intolerable to even have a little bit of progressive broadcasting out there. Well, you know, because jiggling oxymorons can't win any arguments if there's anybody else countering them. But at any rate, to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Jello and frothy.
That just doesn't even.
And frothy.
That just sounds awful.
I know it.
That's why I mentioned it like that. Because when you think about it, it is. So, anyway, I was just calling Bob. This is Kevin in Colorado Springs.
Yes, indeed, I know that.
And just wanted to call and check in with you. Tonight I'm going to be doing my civic duty and going to the caucuses for the Democrats. Got a lot of choices on the Democratic ballot, so might even be back in time to catch the end of your program.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I guess the president is showing up unopposed, or what?
I think Randall Terry might be on the ballot out here. I'm not sure. I'll have to see when I get there.
Well, you know, we wanted a primary challenger for Obama. There he is.
Yeah, yeah. So, I'm just thinking of 26. If you think it's crazy now, assuming Obama wins re-election, can you imagine what 2016 is going to be like?
It's going to be hell among the yearlings. That's all there is to it.
Yes, it is. So, and that's pretty much all I had. I just wanted to check in with you.
Well, I've always wondered what caucuses are like, because I've never lived in a caucus state, and I've always thought that are they a little more fun than just going and voting in a primary? Or, I mean, do you get to argue with folks? Or I don't.
Yeah.
Tea and cookies. What?
Yeah. To all of the above. The last caucus I went to was the senatorial race a couple years ago with Bennett and Romer. And you got a chance to talk to the other people and see who they were voting for, kind of make your case for why you were supporting which candidate. And been voted, and you know, it was a very low key atmosphere, very conversational. No, even though the person sitting next to you may have been for the other candidate, there was no angst between you. You know, I'm sure the Republican caucuses couldn't come close to what we had in terms of congeniality, but you know, it was very nice atmosphere. I enjoyed it. So, and I'm going tonight principally because, yeah, I know Obama's the only one on the ballot, but, you know, I want to stay as involved as I can. And
but you've also got down ballot candidates, right?
We should. I think so. I'm really not sure what this ballot is going to include tonight because of there's just been so much going on in the state of Colorado that we don't have a senator to be reelected this year, and I don't know of any Democratic challengers in my district for the House. So, you know, kind of going to be one of those things where once I get there, I'll find out. But, yeah, it would be a down-ballot kind of year where, you know, assuming there were a challenger for every office, you're going to have the congressional offices open, all the congressional seats, and maybe one senator seat. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know what they'll do in terms of a platform and that kind of thing.
Well, and being as how it's Colorado Springs, all the family values types have got to be over on the GOP side, right?
No, I consider myself very much family values, and
well, but I mean, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
The ones who thump Bibles instead of reading them.
Right. And yeah. Yeah, I think you could safely say that. So, I know they had their caucuses about a month ago on the Republican side, so I don't know why they don't do it all on the same night. I guess because of the lack of space. I'm not sure why. I would think in the end it would save both parties money to do it all on one night, you know, and kind of share the expense, but hey, since each party has its own agenda, I guess they can't even try compromising on something like that, you know, to share space. So,
well, enjoy them, and I hope it goes well, and let us know what happens.
Oh, yeah, and I wanted to let you know, too, you mentioned it was 60 out there in West Virginia.
Yeah.
It's about 70 out here in the Springs today. So, and that's going to be followed up with 30 tomorrow. So, you know. kind of a no climate change here in Colorado.
No, no, and you know, I always look forward to that time of the year when you can just hang the coat, the heavy coat, in the closet and know you don't have to get it back out again. But when is that day? Because
Colorado Springs, maybe June.
Yeah, see.
And even then, with the way the weather's changing, you know, I've lived here in Colorado Springs 16 years now, and I haven't had, like you were saying, consistency where I knew that, you know, right around May 31st or something, you could put the coats away, that kind of thing. It has changed every year, and I've seen it last well into June where it's cold in the morning, and I've seen it get very warm very early like it is this year. So you can't base it on, well, this is a normal winter, because I think that's a thing of the past.
Normal is only a setting on a dryer, Kevin. Well, good luck, and I hope we'll hear back from you.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to check in because tonight and tomorrow night are filled up with meetings, so I wanted to check in with you and tell everybody hello.
All right, will do. All right, take care.
Take care.
See you, Kevin.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And I have to tell you, probably the funniest tweet thus far on the whole Flimball affair just came across from Dave Zirin at Edge of Sports, and I know that we have a lot of Dave Zirin fans in the Horn family. He just tweeted a little bit ago, "Granted, I've been drinking cough syrup for hours, but I think I just read that Peyton Manning finally apologized to Sandra Fluke." Because, of course, the big story that just broke not too long ago is that Peyton Manning will be cut from the Indianapolis Colts. You know, the whole so long and thanks for all the fish routine. Here's the apple. Here's the roadmap. Good luck, son. And he's apparently going to play next season, but we just don't know for whom. I love that drink. Yeah, and that happens when you drink the cough syrup for hours. Peyton Manning finally apologized to Sandra Fluke. I saw that and I just giggled. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
You know, I've been trying to get you on White Rose, but I can't do it. I go to the whiterose.org and it goes for Windows Media Player, 48 BPS, and it won't work. I don't know why.
Huh, weird. A lot of folks, you can try TuneIn.com, you can try iTunes Radio. There's a number of it, but WhiteRoseSociety.org, if you click on the Head On With Bob Kincaid link, they're all there. You may not be configured. You may be clicking one that you're not configured for.
Oh, that's probably the case. But nonetheless, if you don't mind, just leave me on hold, could you?
Oh, sure. Be happy to, Jim. All right.
I don't have anything to say other than, you know, what's been said already.
Okay. Well, if something gets under your skin, just hang up and dial back in. Okay.
Okay. Bye.
All right. See you, Jim. We're a full service radio network. Hey, welcome to the program. Well, with the new phone system, it used to be that I'd get a busy signal. Now I get just silence. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
You, bro, you.
Would you happen to be on a speaker?
No.
Oh, okay. You just kind of sound a little bit far away.
I'm Bluetoothy, but not speaker.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, it's working.
Okay. You're not up. You're dead. You're dead, Fred. No one can get to you.
Yeah, well, it's just.
I'm listening to you, but I can't get through.
Yeah, and Fred apparently, I don't know that it was Fred. I tend to think these things are right-wing driven, Cossack.
Well, yeah. I've been having problems establishing contact with left-wing sites today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Any particulars?
All the usual suspects. Counterpunch was having a problem loading. Whatchamajiggy. Balance Tyranny. They were all having problems today. Took three attempts to get through.
Well, you know, they're probably the right wing are probably a little pissed off because they're the de facto titular leader of the Republican Party is being called out. Well, you know, the emperor hath no clothing.
Well, I mean, Bob, how can you possibly say you did not intend this as a personal attack? What can be more personal than calling
personal? Yeah, it doesn't get much more personal than that. And in point of fact, I just ran across something a little bit ago that makes me feel kind of, it's one of those horn ahead of the curve moments again. Namely this, I guess, the Philadelphia Daily News interviewed a lawyer by the name of Max Kennerly from the Beasley firm, and he is arguing that Ms. Fluke should be able to successfully sue the bejesus. That's a complicated legal term, the bejesus. Sue the bejesus out of Rush Limbaugh because she is not a public figure within the meaning of New York Times versus Sullivan and Hustler versus Falwell.
Yeah, I was going to say, since when does testifying before Congress make you a public persona?
Well, it doesn't. That's the trick. Lawyer Kennerly said that Flimball's comments, the slut remark and the prostitute remark, embedded false statements of fact and were therefore defamatory, and a judge might allow a jury to decide the case. Because all of these things hinge on whether or not you can get the case to the jury. Kennerly noted his statements implied facts about somebody's sex life, that she was promiscuous and trading sex for money. Now, see, I don't know how it is in any particular jurisdiction or in the District of Columbia, Cossack, but way, way, way back when, the general teaching on libel and slander is that there's a particular corner of libel and slander, defamatory statements, that are called libel and slander per se. You know, and the two things that get you to libel and slander per se, and the lawyers in the audience can either write in or call up and let me know if I'm wrong, are allegations of criminal conduct or mental illness. Either one of those, you don't have to prove that you weren't, or you don't have to prove damages. You don't have to prove damages. You just have to prove that the slanderer or the libeler said those things and that you're not. And boom. The next thing you know, the jury's got a little pencil in its hand, and if you've argued it well, then they write down the number one, and then they start writing zeros till their little hands get tired.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what should happen to Flush Flimball.
Yeah. Well, it would be different if you said it once and let it lie. That could be... With a good lawyer, you'd countenance that as an excited outburst. But repeating it 3 days in a row, there is no excitedness. This is malice aforethought.
Well, I mean,
he was planning on defaming this woman.
Yeah, and even if you held her, or held him to the held that she was a public citizen, still it's a jury question as to whether or not he engaged in actual malice, and that's why his non-apology said that he was trying to be absurd. You know, I've seen Waiting for Godot, Cossack. That's absurdism. A jiggling junkie screaming slut behind a microphone. That ain't it.
And you're right when you refer to his sweats and jiggles.
Well, credit David in Tennessee with that. Apparently he's jonesing hard. And see, that's
what it looks like.
I mean, see, that's the difference, for instance. You know, he is a public figure. And as such, I am free to engage in satire and suggest, for instance, that he is keeping his latest wife in a pit somewhere. It may turn out to be true. But he deliberately puts himself in the public eye, and therefore, you know, all's fair.
Correct. He holds himself out as a public persona. And that's what he lives on.
Right.
Good God. How is it that the such a large swath of the country actually listens to this idiot?
It has to do with psychology, Cossack. It has to do with the fact that they are getting their preconceived racism, their preconceived bigotry, their preconceived misogyny all confirmed. You know, there was a study way back in the 90s. I think it was done by the Annenberg folks. And they took groups of people and they asked them, how well informed do you think you are on current events? And people, you know, it was like people who read the newspaper for their news, people who got their news from television. And then there was a separate group known as Limbaugh listeners. Talk radio listeners mainly, but Limbaugh listeners primarily because, you know, he dominated the market for so long.
Right.
And the Limbaugh listeners, without fail, Cossack said, I am the best informed. I know exactly what's going on in America. Right? And then they gave them an objective test on current events. Guess who failed?
Limbaugh listeners.
Of course. They were dumber than a bag full of hammers.
Yeah.
And so, but if you've already made your mind up, you understand. You know the problems we got in America is them damn liberals and them brown people and them Mexicans. If we could just do something about them, we'd have a pretty nice little country here. And you take that bunch and you just like something out of Hamlet, just pour poison in their ears for 3 hours a day. Well, they're going to come back because every time they turn you off, they're going to have to go out into reality world at some point in time, get confronted by their bigotries, and then they're going to have to come running back to get their bigotry prescription refilled, if you will. Now, it's become more complicated with the advent of Radio Rwanda because they can have it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, which, of course, our good friend horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner identified in the Fox syndrome shared psychotic disorder. Watching Fox actually will make you mentally ill, whereas 3 hours of Flush Flimball a day will just make you stupid.
Yeah. Well, and watching phone news basically will make you dumber than you were before you started watching. You'll actually lose brain cells.
Yeah, and I mean, and consider this all within context, Cossack. You know, when old Don Imus takes to the airwaves to say that you're beyond the pale, you're toast. I mean, you're done. And
he's just jealous.
Yeah, my friends, that Don Imus, he is merely jealous. And it would be interesting to go back just for the fun of it. If somebody had the constitution for it, it would be fun to go back to. But of course, there aren't any archives of Rush Limbaugh for precisely these reasons. It would be fun to go back and find out what he was saying during the Imus affair with the, you know, the whole nappy headed hose comment.
Yeah.
Because either way, it would be telling.
Well, and if you think about it, Imus was bad. But again, he was attacking public figures of some note. You know, Limbaugh grabs this poor college co-ed, hauls her up into the light and starts defaming her. You know, and continues to defame.
Well, and I can't even necessarily get on board with the idea that the Rutgers women's basketball team had put themselves in the public. They put themselves in the public eye as basketball players.
Correct.
But they certainly didn't. Their conduct didn't. No, I mean that was just pure, unmitigated, filthy racism.
Right. And he was quite obvious about that. That's what it was.
But now, you know, here we are, and again, Jesus, I can't even remember how long ago that it was that that whole thing went down. But it's 2012. You know, once again, I find myself. Wait a minute, don't we get? I mean, can we not just band together and fight the Borg or something? There's so much stuff out there that's really stunningly meaningful. Every now and then, News Ninja Gene will send me one of those stories that just spins my head around.
Mm-hmm.
And like this one that I saw the other day, that it's now being reported by NASA that they have discovered oxygen around one of the little ice cubes that orbits Saturn. It's got oxygen. That means there might be life.
That means we have to go out and despoil it.
Well, that right. I mean, get busy. Is it? My God, there might be oil on there. All we got to do is build a big flexible pipeline and. Well, the free market will take care of the rest.
And that's the problem, Bob, that ecologically we still haven't come to grips with the fact that all through the Cold War we kept on selling our side, so-called, through the idea that, you know, every man a king. You know, join us and you can live just the same way we do. And now that you...
Don't forget the haul yourself up by your own bootstraps part.
Well, yeah. But, you know, that just makes a few people, you know, wealthy beyond the dreams of Croesus. But, it doesn't seem to dawn upon these people that with India and China coming online, we'd need an additional four Earths to supply the natural materials that all these people would need to live on the same wasteful level as the U.S.
Oh, and by the way, breaking news. Breaking news. Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist. I said I don't care about this, and I don't, but it's funny anyway. It's good for a laugh. Has been projected to be the winner in Georgia. Now, that, of course, is his home state. But the other numbers are quite interesting, too, Cossack. 17% for Willard Romney, you know, doggone Carr. 20% for Frothy Rick, man on dog. And cranky old libertarian Ron Paul got 4%. That's kind of weird. That 4% for Ron Paul is kind of weird in a place like Georgia where they, you know, where they've got their very own nullificationist and free silver movements.
Right. Well, also I believe that everything possible is being done. All the stops are being pulled to derail
Ron Paul, regardless of how well he or not he does.
You know, I mean, there's other stuff that's telling out there in Vermont. And granted, what are there, 14, 15 Republicans in Vermont? I'm not sure. Cranky old gynecologist Ron Paul, libertarian gynecologist, is projected the winner with 38% of the vote there. Romney came in third. The frothy one came in second. Virginia is being Vermont has changed, 33% for Romney. They're projecting 60% for Willard in Virginia to 40% for Ron Paul. They were the only two on the ballot. The Republicans really don't like Willard.
Yeah.
Let's see. Polls close at 7:30 p.m. in Ohio for the one race that really does matter.
Cafter?
I hope not.
I hope not either. I mean, she's good in some ways. Kucinich is good in so many more. It's not even a contest.
Well, for me, the Keystone Pipeline would be a deal breaker there. I mean, I would be inclined, were I in that district, I would be inclined to vote for Dennis Kucinich anyway. But the Keystone XL Pipeline. Yuck.
Well, and
you know, and she ran sleazy ads again. Can you imagine having the gall to suggest that Dennis Kucinich is anti-worker?
Why does that not surprise me that she would say something like that? I mean, it's just, it's past ridiculous, Bob. And it was done specifically with this idea in mind to angle Kucinich out of the Congress one way or the other.
Well, even under the worst of circumstances, I hope that doesn't last for long.
No, but again.
But you know, Dennis loves his Cleveland. I mean, he's a Cleveland kid.
Yeah. But I mean, this is the whole problem that she captor that is a team player where it really counts, like the XL Pipeline.
Well, you know, yeah, she'll go along to get along.
Correct.
And it was just a dirty bit of redistricting. Hey, a great idea coming in from Kathy in Arizona. She said, we need to test the power of prayer. All conservatives should pray for their candidates this fall and not vote. Just pray. If at least 50% of the conservatives do not vote and their candidate wins anyway, we'll know that prayer works. Think we could get them to take us up on that?
No. Unfortunately, but no.
And just the mere mention of hydrocarbons on other planets, Ray just said, oh yeah, BP begins drilling in space. What could go wrong with that?
Exactly. I mean, they can't even do it on their native planet without causing disruption. What would they do to a virgin planet?
Yeah.
Well... what they do to every virgin they come across.
Yeah. Well, Cossack, you have yourself a good night, my friend. And you know, as was noted in the Green News report, BP has settled up with residents along the Gulf, so everything's just hunky dory now.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
we're waiting for that massive blob of crude to start creeping. It will. It's killing everything down there anyway, so that's really helpful.
Yeah, I know. All right. Take care, Cossack.
You too, Bob.
All right.
Love to the kit. Love to Agnes.
Will do. Later now.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
The Cossack calling from North Florida. Hey, welcome to the program. Anybody there? Oh, I need a screener. I really, really do. Okay, let's have just a little bit of fun. Well, not fun, but you know, we have remarked. I told you the story about. It was about this time last year when I toddled down to Tunica, Mississippi for a meeting. And it was at a casino there. Well, Tunica is nothing but casinos. And they had the Paul Erdene American Grits Kittle Cafe and the Toby Keith I Love This Bar and Grill. You could sit there playing blackjack and just feel your arteries hardening at a distance. Well, this is... this just broke today. You remember that our buddy Bourdain got in some hot water not too long back for tweeting something like, heard about Paula Deen and her new... Anyway, she had announced that she had diabetes, and then she announced a new line of diabetic foodware, cooking stuff, ingredients, whatever. And Bourdain tweeted, "Think I'll break my leg and go into the crutch business," or something like that. Well, I haven't seen the tweet yet, but this is a dandy. She has... been served with a lawsuit that says that she and her brother Bubba Hires, no really, are responsible for some nasty sexual harassment, infliction of emotional distress, and assault. This coming from TMZ. They've got a restaurant in Savannah, Georgia, called Uncle Bubba's Seafood and Oyster House. Probably trying to capture some of the Bubba Gump trade. Lisa Jackson, not the EPA administrator, a different Lisa Jackson, is the former general manager there at Uncle Bubba's Seafood and Oyster House. And she claims that Paula Deen and Bubba Hires made a series of offensive, sexist, and racist comments over the course of the 5 years she worked there from 2005 to 2010. Allegedly, Bubba Hires would download and look at pornography at work, and he would kiss or spit at Jackson's face and ask her to... Well, sounds like Bubba needs to get together and have a high old time with Flush Flimball. Would ask her to bring photos of herself when she was young for him to look at. He'd then go on to, and come on, the guy's name's Bubba. This is Bubba Conduct. Make comments about other female employees' weight and personal sex life. One employee got dentures, and Bubba Hires said, "I bet your husband's gonna like that." Radar Online has all the suit papers. Back in 2007, Paula Deen answered a question by the plaintiff Jackson about what the attire would be for a catered event. Okay. Send little Timmy and little Cindy and little Susie and little Bobby out of the room, okay? Because I'm going to read you what Ms. Deen allegedly said. when asked what the proper attire for a catered event in 2007 would be. Well, what I would really like is a bunch of little N-words to wear long sleeve white shirts, black shorts, and black bow ties. You know, in the Shirley Temple days, they used to tap dance around. Now, that'd be a true Southern wedding, wouldn't it? But we can't do that because the media would be on me about that. Really? Ms. Dean, Mr. Limbaugh would like to speak with you. Lots of racist jokes told. Violence on the part of Bubba. Ms. Jackson said she quit because the working conditions became absolutely intolerable. The dean side says she was fired because she was a philanderer. And Paula Deen allegedly remarked, quote, "If you think I have worked this hard to lose everything because of a piece of, you better think again." That was the general manager she replaced with Lisa Jackson. Inescapable pornography was at the restaurant. That's got to be pretty pervasive. When he asked, allegedly, when he asked Lisa to bring pictures of herself to work, of herself when she was younger, Bubba told her, "You have nice legs." He told two larger women, "Fat girls shouldn't be wearing capri pants or skirts." Yuck. I mean, that's just gross. David in Tennessee, you're a cynical man. His name's Bubba and his baby sister has enough money to bail his ass out of any damn thing? Just what could go wrong with that? You know what I'd like to do is I'd like to have a bunch of them and put them in white shirts and short pants and bow ties, you know, like back in the Shirley Temple days and just have them dancing all around the wedding, tap dancing like they used to. But I couldn't get, I'd get in terrible trouble for that. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yes?
This is Carol in Las Vegas.
Well, hey, good to hear from you.
Hey, you know, I'm a little surprised I just picked up the phone and called and you answered right away. You kind of took me off guard here.
Well, I was going to get myself in terrible trouble with the Paula Deen story, so I figured I'd maybe get some help.
Well, you know, I listen to your program on podcast, so I haven't been listening today. And what I'm really sorry about that. What I really called about was, you know, when I'm listening to the program on podcast, I'm at work. You know, I work in a casino and I have breaks and sometimes, and when I'm on breaks, I'm listening to the podcast and people will come up to me and they'll say, "Well, what are you listening to?" And I'll go, "This is my last connection to sanity in this world."
Oh, bless your heart.
And, you know, in the past couple of weeks, you know, with all the Republican primaries and things like that, and a lot of people I hear on some of the programs I download are getting pretty sure that Obama is really going to walk away with this thing. And I don't know about anybody else, but everything I hear around me from people I work with, most of the people have no clue, and they're going to be voting Republican.
Well, I think that's a requirement for membership in the Republican Party, isn't it, Carol?
But, you know, when I... over time, when I tried to talk to people about political issues, which I really don't do anymore, because it's too frustrating and I get too angry, I'm amazed at how people cannot connect what's happened in their own lives. I know so many people that have lost their homes at my job. I know so many people whose spouses have lost their jobs and are not working, and they still blame Obama. And I'm not a person that can really defend Obama that well because I'm not very happy with him, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is I'm really insecure about what might happen in this election. I mean, in 2010, the Republicans made big gains, and nothing's really changed from then, do you think?
But we saw 2010 coming from a long way off, didn't we?
Well, I don't know. How do you mean?
Well, I mean, historically, sitting presidents don't do well in their first midterm.
Mm-hmm.
Two, we saw the rise of the teabaggers, and we saw the rise. You know, it was January of 2010 when we got Citizens United, so we knew that there would be a new monetary experiment in government, and everything was looking pretty much like it was going to hit the fan come November, and the one thing that it's worth remembering is that the people we lost out of the House of Representatives were people who would have been would have had Republicans in those seats anyway, save for the fact that they were elected as so-called blue dogs and tended to vote like imitation Republicans anyway, which they were.
No, I totally agree with that. But when you're looking at this from a standpoint of, and when I listen to programs, especially in your program, because you get a lot of call-ins and a lot of people expressing their views who really are intelligent people, which is something, unfortunately, we don't hear a lot these days. But the people I hear don't make those connections, don't make the connections between, look at what's happened to my life in the last 10 years, and there's no one offering any change, really. And they're saying, oh, well, you know, this, everything I hear at work is, well, you know, the deficit and, you know, Obama's destroying the country. And I'm like, where do I even start?
Oh, see, I have no patience for the deficit argument whatsoever. Because 99% of the people who run around prattling about, if not 100%, prattling about the deficit are people who were just fine while George was running up the credit, running up an illegal war on a credit card, which is where the deficit came from. And in fact, his boss, Dick Cheney, said, well, Reagan proved that deficits don't matter anymore. Remember that? Because I do.
Oh, well, exactly. But you and I and the people who call this program are the people who understand that. What has me so frustrated in many ways is I still am getting a lot of reaction that doesn't make the connection. And what I have done is, I don't talk to people much anymore except just a few individuals because I can't deal with that anymore. And when I listen, I'm saying, gee, this is only going to get worse and not better. And I'm in a position where at 58 years old, I'm still working even though my income is down almost 40%. I'm still able to make my house payment. And so I'm sort of in good shape. And when I look around and I see people who have children, I'm like, gosh, how do you deal with this? How do you deal with what we're looking at coming up?
Oh, I look at my teenage children who don't have to worry about a work life yet, and I am terrified for them. I don't know what their world will look like, because it's not the so-called normal world that I grew up in, where somebody had a job and they worked there for 50, 40, 30, whatever years. They got the gold watch, they had a decent retirement, a nice pension, and you know, mom and dad traveled the country and saw the sights. That America is gone. Inexorably so. I don't think it's possible for it to come back, and for us to continue this fantasy game that says that it can is ultimately dangerous. It's certainly never going to come back under a budget by the likes of, you know, Paul Eddie Munster Ryan. He wants to make it worse. And these, you know, these nimnals like the Willard Romney and Rick Santorum, they you know, they just want to put the last nails in the coffin.
Well, I totally agree with you, and that's my frustration, and I don't really see how this, for instance, okay, we're coming up to an election. I'm a registered Democrat. I've always been a registered Democrat, and I voted in every election I could vote in my whole life. And now I'm sitting here saying, well, and in fact, the one time I got through your program before, like I said to people, you know, here in Las Vegas, I swore I wouldn't vote for Harry Reid again, and I did, because the alternative was incredibly worse. You know, Sharon Angle was saying, oh, well, we just need to get rid of Social Security right now. And I'm like,
yeah, and take a chicken to a doctor, and yeah.
Exactly. So, but I really don't know what I'm going to do in this election. You know, when I hear all this craziness about Republican nominees, you know, it gets me worked up, and I say, well, I'm going to vote for Obama just to piss them off, if nothing else. You know what I'm saying? But I keep saying to myself, gee, is that really an intelligent thing to do? But I mean, I don't know what else to do.
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is, if Obama wins the presidential election, then a certain segment of the population will at least have the satisfaction of getting to gripe about Barack Obama for four more years, as opposed to the unmitigated hell on earth that will be unleashed by a Rick Santorum or even a Willard Romney. Yeah, Romney's playing this stealth game where he's what St. Paul described as all things to all people. But and maybe he thinks that he can be that so-called moderate Republican Massachusetts governor and do that in the White House. But he is sadly mistaken if he thinks that, because the teabaggers and the boners and the cantors will not let him do that. They won't. The teabaggers won't. The cokes won't. The entire infrastructure that is hell-bent on destroying this nation will not let him be that. And you know, I that other problem that I have is with those who say that, well, you know, America's sick, and before it can get well, it all just needs to crash and burn, and we need to start all over again. And while I can understand that from a theoretical standpoint, that same nasty thing that happens to me kicks in, and I start thinking about not what it is that gets burned to the ground, but who it is that gets burned to the ground. Because you know what? The 1% are never going to suffer. Even in 1929, that much-repeated myth of the traitors on ledges, you know, maybe two or three folks did that. But not a bunch of them. And they survived very nicely, thank you very much. The soup lines were not filled with people who got burned on margin calls on Wall Street. The soup lines were filled with people who got burned on believing in the American dream. Just like the poor and the middle class have been burned this time through. And so to say, yeah, you know, burnt, well, you know, the shorthand is burn, baby, burn. If you take 15 seconds and think about it, and think about what you're wishing on people, it becomes intolerable.
No, I totally agree. And of course, you know, one of the other shows I listen to, Malloy, you know, he talks about that, and I agree with you. There's that part of me that says, yeah, maybe it has to be all torn down to where we can do anything again. But I agree with you that the people with all the money and the people with all the power are not going to suffer. So, but let me ask you this.
And they will gladly shoot us to keep from doing it.
Exactly. But let me ask you this.
Sure.
What, how optimistic are you, really, that if Obama is reelected, that there really is going to be any appreciable change in the next 4 years?
Next to not at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because just using history as a yardstick, second terms are not impressive things, even in the memory of the likes of you and me. You remember when Dim Leader got reelected, sort of, Ohio notwithstanding, and said, yeah, I've earned me some political capital and I'm going to spend it, and what we're going to do is we're going to privatize Social Security. Yeah, not so much. Were it not for the fact that there was a compliant Congress, he should have been impeached. The second term of Bill Clinton was eaten alive by the Lewinsky scandal, brought to you to the tune of some $70 or $80 million worth of taxpayer money by the burn it to the ground attitude of the GOP. The Gipper's second term was nothing to write home about. And of course Nixon's second term ended in absolute humiliation and his resignation. So I think I've pretty much covered all the second terms within my actual memory. There's not just a heck of a lot that happens in second terms. And I'm sure that brighter people than me could offer answers for why that is. Some of it has to do with legacy building, and some of it has to do with the fact that because we term limited the president, the opposition party knows that it does not have to deal with that individual anymore. All second-term presidencies are lame duck from day one.
Well, that is history. But now what I'm getting from the crazies on the right who talk around me is that Obama is going to take away all our guns.
Absolutely.
He's going to... the minorities are going to take over the country.
Every woman gets a free abortion.
Yep. And so what I'm saying is, why wouldn't Obama just say, the hell with it? Why wouldn't he do, for instance, like what Carter did? Carter slapped a windfall profits tax on the oil company. And a lot of people don't remember that.
And Carter didn't get a second term.
No, but he did the right thing.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, for as vilified as it is, the historical facts are that the Carter administration got a ton of work done in that one term. But the American people were not bright enough to notice it. And, of course, all the dirty tricks of the right wing and the negotiations that kept the hostages in captivity until Reagan was elected, and then he traded arms for the hostages, all of that. You know, there's a reason I think that Barack Obama keeps suggesting that he would prefer diplomacy with Iran, because that is just one of those things that I don't know, it's like playing with super glue. Once you get one little dot on you, sooner or later you're gonna be just glued all together and immobilized.
Well, you know, I tend to go back. I was thinking the other day, back when Bush stole the first election, and I was thinking what the country looked like back then. You know, gasoline was about $1.20 a gallon, I think, at that time. We had a balanced federal budget for about 3 years. The national debt was about $5.7 trillion and going down. We had no wars. And then Bush came in. And of course, we know the history after that.
Right, and you know, there are two seminal moments within my lifetime, one of which I was too young to appreciate the gravity of. That was the assassination of John Kennedy. That is a turning point in American history. It changed the fabric and the future trajectory of this nation in ways that we're still figuring out. The one that I am most conversant with and most cognizant of is the one that happened in November of 2000, when George Bush lost the election but won the presidency by virtue of legal wrangling and all the stuff that probably doesn't bear going into. That moment changes us, because everything you just described is true. And I remember when all the little right wingers, the Pat Buchanans and the George Wills and that bunch, snickered when Al Gore would say that he wanted to put, because we had a surplus, he wanted to put the surplus in a lockbox for Social Security. Ha ha ha! A lockbox. Ha! Ain't that funny? And George Bush ran around saying, "Well, the economy's running too hot. So what we need is we need a tax cut to cool the economy down." And it was, it was just insanity. It's just the stuff that the guy on acid in the park babbles to himself while he's, building the fire in the hollowed out cypress tree. But that moment changed us forever, because I've been asked before, and I will say this again and again and again. I'll give the same answer every time. If Al Gore is the president of the United States, September 11th, 2001 doesn't happen. If Al Gore is the president of the United States, the Iraq War doesn't happen. If Al Gore is the president of the United States, Afghanistan doesn't happen. And all of those deficit grinding things don't grind. And we're sitting here in 2012 trying to figure out what the next cool thing we can do with all the money is.
Well, I guess that's my point, is I'm a person who, and I know that no one wants to discuss it, and I won't. I'm a person who absolutely believes that 9/11 was totally different in the way it was described. And I believe that the reason George Bush had to be in the White House was so that could happen. Now, I know there's a lot of people who disagree with me and all that, but the point is, the country prior to that and where we find ourselves now, in my opinion, is no accident. That's where certain powers wanted the country to go.
Oh, I don't think you have to have any wildly differing opinion about September 11, 2001 to reach that conclusion. It was all laid out in that now infamous passage from the manifesto of the Project for a New American Century, that little known excerpt from Paul Wolfowitz's speech on June the 11th or 9th or whatever, 2001, to the graduating class at West Point, where he said, "I can't tell you what's coming. All I can do is tell you to be prepared to be surprised." Huh? No. There were a group of people that were trying, that if it hadn't happened, something would have happened.
Well, and getting back to this coming election, I guess what frustrates me more than anything else is I don't hear anybody on either side, and I never expect to hear anything from the right, obviously, but I never hear any solutions, real solutions. Let's raise taxes on the upper bracket. Let's raise taxes on the corporations. Let's go after the people who stole all the money. I still remember them packing, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars of cash on cargo planes and sending it over to Iraq to where we never saw it again.
Yeah, I guess we've kind of forgotten the Coalition Provisional Authority, haven't we?
What says that, when someone robs a bank and they get caught, they go get the money back? And all I'm saying is, I want to hear solutions. I want to hear somebody stand up in our political system and